Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Game Center, the must-have app for gamers. Game Center is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 7,000 games. Game Center is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee, and we have an awesome, awesome show. I'm so freaking excited for this show. It's exploding.
We haven't even done it yet.
The content. I know.
How can you say it's awesome?
Because
I'm
looking
at a lot to talk about.
I'm looking at the sheet.
But it's too much pressure.
Next week, it's a subpar show. Just a heads up.
We don't do subpar shows around here.
Mediocrity.
You stop at par.
We stop at par. There are par shows, but our par is, you know,
above par.
Our par is above par.
Our par is above par.
That's a t-shirt.
At a par three.
Every child is above average.
All right, let me introduce the crew you're going to be chilling with for the next couple of hours. That is, of course, is Mr. Jeff Cannata next to me.
Two N's, one T.
And Plan Berghammer is back.
Yes, Plan B.
No, you're Plan Berghammer.
I apologize to all the people in, well, the two people in GAF who, you know, for the love of Christ, I made some mistakes last week.
Life's too short. Don't
I know,
apologize.
And those are the two perfect people on GAF. I know that. Because you're perfect. That's what your shirt says that. I'm perfect.
It does. Someone very smart made that shirt for me.
A Mr. Perfect shirt,
though. My apologies to you.
Probably my very good friend Andrew Pfister down there, freed from the wheels of steel and on the mic.
Nice.
Probably.
Because he's a DJ who can rap. He's like Houdini.
Wiki, wiki, wiki.
I want to see this.
Houdini. Nice contemporary reference for the kids.
I know. Well,
we are Houdini. We are Houdini.
Yeah? Exactly.
I had that album. I loved that album.
Friends.
So many of us have them. Before we go any further, let's be friends. Is a word you use every day.
That's
sometimes
right.
You use it in the wrong way. You can look the word up again and again, but the dictionary doesn't know the meaning of friends. But if you ask me, I know I couldn't be much help because a friend's somebody you judge for yourself. Some are okay and they treat you real cool. Others make your mind for being a fool. You like to be with some because they're funny. Others come around when they need some money. All right. Sorry.
Whoa!
Do you have to pay money for that now that you just did that whole song?
I think so. I think
restart the show.
I don't know, dude.
Yeah.
I
think we got a lot to talk about here.
Yeah. And there's also that awesome song by Nas with the line underneath it. It's also really, really good.
Yeah.
If I ruled the world. Anyway, enough of all that. Let's talk about some games because we have a ton to cover. So should we... I'm trying to figure out how to arrange this. We have all of the Bethesda stuff.
We should start with Portal 2,
That's what I say. Portal? There's like some Portal game or something?
Yeah. We can tease the Bethesda stuff.
All right. So we're going
to
talk about...
Do we have to talk about Portal?
We're going
to
talk about Skyrim. God. We're going to talk about Rage. We're going to talk about Prey 2. Hunted, maybe. Brink, maybe. All that kind of stuff. But we'll talk about Portal 2 first. And later on in the newsy section, we'll talk about like the Portal 2 controversial crap, like the ARG and whether or not it launched early. And
I like the newsies section.
And why
that's when we do that musical number.
That's right.
With hats.
That's right. Well, I'm gonna
go home.
Top hats?
I'll be getting my ledger book out of my note bag.
Backpack.
I'll be getting my Trapper Keeper out of my book bag.
Yes, you'll have to watch the video to understand where that joke is coming from, but whatever.
All right, so Andrew has finished Portal 2.
As have I.
Wait. You finished co-op also, though.
Almost. I got one chamber away before I had to leave Valve. I had to review it up there.
All right.
Unfortunately.
Billy and I played some co-op last night. Have you played co-op yet?
I have.
Ooh.
We've got the whole co-op.
We got the whole gamut. We will assure you listeners right now that we will not overly spoil the game. However, right, after the discussions that we've had about spoilers, some of you might think that us just mentioning the word Portal 2 would be a spoiler.
So. I think we will label spoilers
as spoilers.
As spoilers.
Should we give them a degree?
We will explain exactly how to solve each puzzle. Okay, room, you step on the button, and then...
You step on the button, it opens the door.
The first room is not a room.
Should we establish like a color-coded spoiler threat warning level?
Sure.
Because that worked
blue
out so well
or
for the
orange
government.
Threat level game.
Blue or orange.
Okay, so the beginning of Portal 2, because I'm only... to me, it's still like Portal 1. Interesting conversation that...
Have you gotten to Liquids yet?
No.
But then I've seen you have not even seen...
Exactly.
Liquids come in later.
Yeah. So I started...
You've got a long way to go.
There was a discussion that Dylan Cuthbert from you know, Q Games over in Kyoto started on Twitter with me about he was like, well, I'm really enjoying Portal, but it seems a little samey. And right.
It's so a reasonable thing to say at first.
At first. Yes.
Although right. I think even at first, it changes things up enough, and it shows you a scale and a level right at the beginning.
Right at the beginning.
Yeah. That the first game doesn't even approach.
Really?
Yeah. And
you didn't
and
think so from the introduction scene?
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
It was the thing that struck me most, and I wrote this in my review for EGM, like, right away,
yeah.
Valve was like, okay, you're in this small room.
That is really cool.
And we're going to put you to sleep and wake you up who knows when later.
Mm-hmm.
And this room actually isn't a room, and you get to see, as you're moving through the docking station, you get to see everything crumbling around you, and that immediately says, this is not going to be like the first game.
Yeah.
That's true. And at the same time, I've had this amazing sense of reminiscing going through the first couple of hours of the game because, I swear to God, they must have psychologists doing some of their dialogue. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, mm-hmm. testing is fun. We are glad you're back. And I'm like, you're right. Testing is fun. I want to test more. Can I test some more, please? I'm like, Jesus Christ, what's happening to me?
Yeah,
it's kind of strange.
You really see a lot of different. Like Sunday, I ran through Portal 1 again, just real quick because I was hoping that Portal was going to unlock earlier than it did. But yeah, there is such.
You couldn't find any crack around, so you just did some weed. Yeah, practice, tied you over.
Practice crack. yeah, it was absolutely mind blowing. Like how different the experience was, and they do lead you in. You know how Valve does it really well,
sure.
Like, kind of handhold you through the beginning part, but I noticed, I thought it was very, very different from the outset, especially the engine, just the engine alone,
man.
How the visuals
beautiful.
Are. And you were even mentioning, you know, on your rig, like I have a pretty decent rig. I have a quad core, decent video card, and I could turn everything up, but it, from my understanding from everybody else, like that thing scales really well on a lot of people's computers.
I think it's more than just scaling. So it's funny, people were like, you know, the snarky response is, well, it's a 7-year-old engine. But I think back to the Lighthouse demo. Do you remember that, Andrew?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And you remember how, like, there was such a, like, emphasis.
I still have that on Steam.
So you made such an emphasis while they were going through that to call out the function that each modular piece of their game engine was doing to set the scene and create it. And then as he wrapped it up, he talked about how, you know, we're not building another engine ever again. What we're going to do is we've built this as an extensible engine where we can go in and modify these pieces and improve on them and improve on them and improve on them. And I think that the fruits of their labor are that it does scale really well. It does go back incredibly well. We were talking about Homefront right before mm-hmm. the show, and I tried to play it on my machine. Billy tried to play it on his, and Andrew tried to play it on his, and we all had the same experience of like slideshow, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
just on mine at least, it just wasn't that fluid, but it wasn't a slideshow. But I couldn't, you know. Then you just go back into the settings and dial things down, and I could never get it where it felt fluid enough for where I could just probably play it on a console.
And my gear is a little older than yours and yours, but I just had so many problems with it that I would rather play it on console. I think at this point.
So you know, my only issue with,
you're probably playing on console, right?
I played it on 3.
I didn't mean that derogatorily. It's
yeah.
fine. No, dude, that's like this is not the forums. I play a lot of games on console.
And just to reiterate, we're talking about
sent that to
we're talking
me,
about Homefront, not Portal, right now.
Both. I played
okay,
on
okay.
console. But yes, my only complaint with Portal
is
loading screens.
Yeah,
a lot of them, and
some really badly placed ones.
Badly placed ones, especially toward the end of the game, mm-hmm. when things get more, let's say, frenetic.
Yes,
and it's broken at the pace of that, and I feel so emotionally connected to what's going on.
It breaks the drama moment of it.
It does, and it's so unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but
that's really my only complaint.
Going back to the first game, though, loading points happen in the elevator. So
right.
this also happens in the elevator.
There are no, but there are points.
At the end.
And that's true. But yeah.
I mean,
let's not talk about the technical part. I mean,
well,
that's just the technical part, my only
complaint.
As it was mine, too. But this particular technical part affects these certain moments that they've spent so much time and energy trying to craft. It's like
true.
This very frenetic escape moment, and all of a sudden, boop.
Yeah, it kills the momentum.
And it's short, but it's enough to be.
Are you mouse and keyboarding or controllering?
Mouse, keyboard.
Yeah, see, I was controllering. I actually really like
really?
It. Yeah, I really like it on controller. Like the 360 controller on P-
PC works great.
Well, you don't need that precision.
Yeah. Right.
You know, you're looking for a headshot.
Totally not. Well,
yeah.
There are a couple maybe where you need to get a portal, you can squeeze a portal in, but it's not like a timing-based thing. Like, oh, I have to get that portal right now, right now.
Yeah.
But there are, like, you can easily do that. Like, the bumper on the control pad zooms you in. It's not like it's hard to aim.
I would love to have a spoiler-filled discussion at some point with you guys, finding out what was your most difficult. Because I think one of the things that they...
Well, for Billy pinged me on AIM a couple days this week, and the two puzzles he asked about were the two sticking points that I had. So I'm sure across...
It's probably similar.
Yeah. If you extrapolate, yeah. I'm sure a lot of people had the same problem.
I loved the fact that I was fortunate enough to be able to play it before it was released, so I didn't even have the option of going to a FAQ or anything. Mm-hmm. So I was forced
same
to...
Same here.
And Portal 1 and Portal 2 both have... This and Braid was like this for me as well, and Limbo to a certain extent, where when I figured it out, I feel like I am the smartest man to ever walk the earth.
Yes.
And of course, it's the solution to the puzzle, you mm-hmm. know, so everybody has to get through it. But there's this wonderful feeling of, oh, I thought laterally enough to get wrap my brain around. And once you know how to do it, then the execution of it is also fun. But it's like, yes, I just... It's such a wonderful feeling in gaming.
And the best part about Portal is that the next chamber you step into, they're like, oh yeah? You think you're smart?
Yeah.
Try this.
And they build on what you just did some of the time, mm-hmm. especially in the co-op. I found that even more in the co-op side, they built on what you just did.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, okay, we're going to add plus one.
Even
to
the way
you
they divide the five chambers into concepts. Yeah. And yeah.
Well, so I was thinking about, you know, playing Portal and playing Portal 2. Playing Portal 1, you were just sort of... Like, I would like to go back and play it again, because I think part of the reason I'm enjoying Portal 2 is I'm not just completely overwhelmed with the, holy shit, this is so creative, I would never have fucking thought to do this, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Instead, I'm like just really like dropped right in, very quickly got back into the groove of it, and was really just enjoying that mental part of it.
Yeah.
And I think part of the secret sauce, because I was sitting there just sort of like daydreaming about it, is that they somehow or other, and I really haven't like... thought through like these specifics of breaking down the design of where the pieces come from. But what they lead you to is they lead you to that creative aha moment. Mm-hmm. And they give it to you as a very real euphoric experience of, oh, aha, got it. Bam, reward. And then they're very quick to take you into the next one. But you know, I mean, then it becomes very Pavlovian, because you know mm-hmm. that the next reward is coming and you know when you're going to get there. Right. It's also incredible how much tuning must go into how much information do we give the player to get them through this puzzle.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes there's like an iconic clue. Sometimes
color is used a lot. Yeah. Another thing that I was so impressed with is they took all the things that work out of Portal 1, and I think they go much farther with the best parts of that game. I found the things that I liked most in Portal 1 were the times when I was flinging myself around the environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there is so much more of that in
especially
this game.
Later on when you get, you know, further down into
the depths of it.
Yeah. They're like, okay, we're not in small rooms anymore.
Yeah. The scale
anything
and scope,
can go.
You get a zoom and you need it.
Mm-hmm.
There is such a wonderful feeling of when you get those momentum moments and when you start flinging your own body around the environment. And that was only just a small part of the first game. And I love the fact that it's such a bigger element here. There's a second point that I had, but I can't remember what it was. But
later on in the game, kind of to that point, they kind of reduce the divisions between the puzzles. Like, you're not going from room area to room area. Sometimes you'll get through a room and you'll go on to the next area and be like, wait a minute, I have to go back.
Yeah.
To the area I just was and set up what
so
I, how to get through.
So, am I understanding correctly that it ceases to be testing
In a way?
In a way, yeah.
Let's just say the scale and scope of the game get blown way open.
It's not so much testing as it is navigation through an entire gigantic space. Some of it is framed as a test, and a lot of it is just, okay, you have to get from here to somewhere.
And I think also in the first game, they relied a lot on potentially violent death and danger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot more of the robots shooting you. And that happens in the beginning of this game a little bit, but they abandon it,
mm-hmm.
move away from it for a large stretch of the game. And I love that about it. I'm not having to worry about getting shot by robots. I'm just
figuring out how to get through this area. And that, to me, is the best part of the game, and I love that they honed in on that and emphasized it.
That makes me happy.
Yeah.
Because I find playing the game to be a very, very, very joyful, I'm using quotes, but a very joyful experience, in that you're just having a great time with it. It's very fun. It's making you think. It's cute and clever. Like who wrote all the dialogue for GLaDOS?
It's Steven Merchant is spectacular.
It's so good.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my only tiny, teeny, teeny, eensy, beensy little gripe about Steven Merchant is I can't ever not see him in my head. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's just so himself.
But they captured that kind of in his eye movements. Like, yeah. He's very, like, nervous, kind of fidgety kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
And from a writing standpoint, you find out so much more about the story. And the way that is conveyed, you find out backstory about GLaDOS. You find out context for what's happening. There's hints of connection to Black Mesa and Half-Life. There's so
That's
much
the things people
richness
really want.
Yep.
Added to that world, and it's really integrated into the whole Valve universe in a wonderful way.
It's like a jokey parallel, or like a jokey younger brother of Half-Life.
Yeah.
Like it has all of those serious elements. It takes place in the same universe, but it doesn't take itself seriously.
Half-Life, the musical.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Right, I got it. I was catching that vibe. They should
and,
do it.
And one of my favorite endings ever.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
It is unbelievably
so
awesome.
Yeah.
Just the final encounter, the final solution to it, and yes. Then the resulting
I have to finish
payoff.
this weekend, obviously.
You have to.
You have to. It is.
It's a good, I mean, granted, I have a little free time on my hands, but it's a great game to marathon through. And not that I suggest anybody to marathon, to finish a game as fast as possible, but it's a game that you don't want to stop playing. Like,
that's exactly true.
Like when I
really,
I've heard things on Twitter from people who like they prefer playing it in chunks.
Ben Kuchera,
yeah.
And you know what? I'm actually in the Ben Kuchera school, so it's
I don't
like,
think there's a wrong answer to it.
Well, I think your brain can get a little fatigued.
Yeah,
you know, I certainly because you sit there and you're
going to
require thinking.
It's not fatigue for me. It's actually that I want to not rush through it.
You want to savor it.
I don't want it to go away. It's like I have so much fun. It's like I sit down and I enjoy it. And I'm like, wow, that was really awesome. Instead of rushing to the next one, I'm going to stop for a minute. I'm going to have a cup of tea and relax, and I'll come to the next one and like super enjoy it. Then I'll do like, all right, I'll go do one more test chamber. And then I'm like, God, I could just sit here all night. And I'm like, but if I do that, it'll be over.
Yeah, I mean, you get to points where you hit a wall where you get to an area or a section that you're stumped. You're just like, and at least that happened to me, once or actually twice. And I was heading to the gym, and that the whole room that was stumping me was just in my head. I could visualize everything. I'm like, okay, I need to go here. I need to do this here and do this here. And I'm like, God, what the hell? And that was the one where I kind of cheated and called you asked you about it, and that was just the one. And I'm pissed because I did want to go through the whole game without like getting hint, but yeah, there was
you
one.
You didn't see the sign just on the way into the room. Yeah, the one that said your brain must be this big to go past this part. Yeah.
Can I get a little artsy for a second?
Sure.
I'm not going to say like games are art or anything, but I'm in the process of learning how to draw, and I'm using this book called
Dude, your horse, by the way, was awesome.
I draw an awesome horse.
You do draw an awesome horse.
So good.
Although I do kind of agree with the whole, like, put wings in a, horn and, on it. And have a peg of horn.
A certain person, right? Yeah. So I'm using this book called Drawing from the Right Side of the Brain, which apparently this is a really good book about, not just, like, drawing lines, but the mentality of thinking of it and how your left brain is this very logical, very driven, kind of dominant thing that kind of blocks you out from trying to, like, learn these new endeavors. So you have to kind of turn off your left brain and kind of let the right brain take over. And the right brain is the part that gives you that euphoric kind of lost track of time. I'm just going to look at this differently. And Portal 2 for me is like a very artsy game like that in that manner.
I think it's, at the risk of overstating it, I think it's everything that's good about video gaming.
Yeah.
I mean, it is the thing we always talk about on the show over and over and over again about how do you create a game that is thrilling and exciting and you don't have to kill someone every 4 seconds. It's got a humor that is all too rare in video gaming. The level of design and artistry and how all those ideas are communicated moment to moment without overwhelming you with text. And I mean, it's
you still do shoot things.
You mean, what do you define shoot?
Shoot. You don't shoot to destroy.
You don't shoot to destroy.
Sometimes you destroy. Sometimes you can destroy.
But you shoot to navigate, and destruction is a side product of the navigation.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, like, I've been thinking about that point of the conversation, too, because I think it's very interesting. You know, a couple weeks ago, we discussed what sort of games would you have without, you know, shooting everybody and not using a shooting mechanic. And I poked fun at the tranquilizer gun, because the tranquilizer gun is, of course, a non-lethal shooting device. And this isn't exactly the tranquilizer gun, but it is still a like inherent part of our understanding of how to create and play video games, that you still run around with a device in your hand that puts a crosshair on the screen and you pull a trigger. Now, granted, it does something completely different. It's really imaginative. Please do not take that as a knock. I think that what they've done with it is fantastically creative. But I am saying that it's still operating within that vocabulary.
I think that's not necessarily a video game thing. You know, it's maybe kind of, it's a play thing, like a childhood play thing, like Cops and Robbers.
Yeah.
You're shooting stuff, like playing Army. You're shooting stuff. It's just kind of the nature, especially, you know, males.
And it, well, male, female, it also comes into, you know, like, how do we interact with the world when we're virtually responding to it? You know, think about, like, the way we work with cameras and videotape. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still that same sort of thing. So maybe it's just simply a natural extension of looking at the world through what's in front of you and having a first person look at it.
And then you perform an action sometimes.
Yeah, then you perform an action. It's like,
But I always feel like I'm creating something in this game rather than destroying. I mean, there are times when you redirect a laser into a robot and that robot explodes. So, yes, there are some destruction elements, but...
Why are you killing the robots?
They were going to shoot me in the face, dude.
Why are you killing the robots?
But there is so much creation in the game and wonderful storytelling. I mean, I think the game out Bioshocks Bioshock.
Oh, hey, wait. Time out.
Send your letters, too.
I do. I think what I love, and let me explain, what I love about Bioshock is that sense of exploration and discovering a world. And it didn't have that in the first Portal. The second Portal, they bring that in.
I disagree.
Well,
towards
to a certain
end.
Extent. Yeah. Finding the cake is a lie stuff and all that. Yeah, you're right. But it's so much grander here.
Yes.
And you find out so much more. And the idea that basically in Bioshock I had to go and find recorded tapes and then decide to listen to them. This game goes, well, why did we need to do that? We'll just play them. We'll just play them when we need you to hear them, you know?
Bioshock and Portal are kind of the same in that there's a narrator, though. Because you don't get all of your backstory in Bioshock through the tapes. You have the narrators, the unreliable narrators, guiding you through, same as Portal. So in that way, they're kind of the same. But I get your point about the tapes. There's no need for tapes. It's all visual. It's all if you stop and look around. If you look at the posters.
Unreliable narrator is actually a really good device. Why do not more games use that? Literature has used it all along. It's like nothing new to literature at all. As soon as you said that, I'm sorry to sidetrack.
No, it's a good point. Maybe because gamers don't like to be misled. They like to have that sense of power. So
because
when it first happened in Bioshock, that's when it was really effective.
Because you're like, in a game, and a game is by its nature a set of systems, and when you have presumed,
it was
rules.
Kind of the whole philosophical point of Bioshock, is that, oh, you think you're in control. You're not.
It's interesting. There'd be a lot more to explore. Like, there's so many, like, different ways you could, even if you applied that to just simple games and had the, like, unreliable, like maybe what you assumed is the way it is isn't actually the way it is, or might not be the way it is.
Yep. Well, Codblops kind of does that, too.
A little bit, yeah.
Codblops does do that a little bit, yes. Yeah, like it's like the intangible like push pull between like who are you working for? What are you actually doing? Who are the good guys? That's a good one. That's a good one. So like all great games, it's even better when you play it together, and the co-op is completely different.
That's what's so great. I think even the concepts employed in the co-op are completely different.
Oh, tremendously different, because now instead of one person with one entry and one exit, you have two people with an entry and an exit, and you can share them and go back and forth between them, and it gets really nuts quickly.
But even like where the single player uses certain devices to give you momentum, for example, the co-op uses completely different ideas to accomplish the same types of things. It's so much more.
Give me a little. For instance, I sort of lost.
Well,
you over there.
For instance, you know, in the single player, if you need to propel yourself, you need to kind of either fall from a large distance or get speed in some way. And in the co-op, you've got these situations where because you have multiple portals, you can create this infinite loop.
Oh, right, and build
and
up
then
speed.
Use that as a way to gain momentum. So it's doing similar things, but in completely new ways that is employing your brain.
The biggest
to explore new
change
areas.
For me in going along those lines is the timing based stuff where you have to have the countdowns and you have to place them at very specific times in order to, you know, build that trust between the partner.
Billy and I were, and it's a shame because I actually don't have a easy, I don't have an easy hookup for voice on my PC. No,
Billy was talking about this earlier, that you guys were basically unable to communicate. And I was thinking, you know, that's almost like a variant to this game to just make it more difficult. Like, let's play Colossus with no communication.
It reminds me of playing the really bad Capcom Resident Evil online games. And, like, there's no voice chat, so we had to call each other on phones and play with phones. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Moment of realization on Garnet's face.
Completely forgotten about that. Yep. That was so horrible.
Resident Evil Outbreak.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I forgot. Wasn't there going to be a sequel to that?
There was. There were two of them. And the second one was still really bad.
Wow, I totally forgot about that.
But no.
And I do remember calling people on that.
The one thing, Valve does the pointing button, I guess, so you can highlight different things. And my microphone worked, and he didn't have one. So, like, between the two, we still figured it out. I mean,
it was actually
like
a really cool human communication negotiation that we went through.
You guys are just constantly high-fiving.
There was a lot of high-fives.
Okay. Five high-fives for left, seven high-fives for right.
But it was like, you know, so I had only the ability to point and highlight at things, right?
I clearly did seven high-fives! Damn it! What are you doing? The seven high fives.
Rage quit co-op.
I'm sorry, Garnet, that it's really you don't have an easy way to hook up a headset. I know the USB is a real bitch, and so is the little hole that says headphones on it. Anyway, I had to point that out. You just
don't have a headset, is what you're saying.
What I meant is I don't own it. Well, I don't have a USB headset at home. I have it at work for Skype at work, but what I need to do is
if anybody from Triton is listening, both Garnet and I need new headsets.
That's the whole point of this segment, isn't it? To get you guys new headsets.
Wow, man, my headset just broke this morning. Well,
I have Astros, but the problem is I have it connected to my 360 and my PS3. So
God,
in order,
it's a problem. In order, such a huge problem.
I have to like disconnect.
Probably in like a whole different area of your one
room life
apartment.
And trials. Yes, of Garnet Lee. It's got to be rough to.
So
be you.
On the communication front, I think actually it's far more like we're making fun of it. Yes, of course it's easier if you can just say, "Hey, dude, we run over there and shoot a portal." Oh yeah, I'll run over here and shoot a portal. But actually, after playing for about 3 or 4 minutes, there was a very cool
shorthand.
Yeah, like an evolving shorthand communication system that, like, even though Billy could talk, he, like, after we talked a little bit and had like our negotiated system of how shit was going to work when we ran around rooms,
7 and 5,
yeah, yep. 7 and 5, it was really just working. I mean,
really just reduce this fraction.
nah. Yeah,
my cat was playing. I went to bed.
Wow, Louis's pretty awesome.
He's got the skills. Mouse, cat, see.
Anyway, like, we were able to get through some relatively, so we got through, you know, in specific, one room that required moving a laser around the room at different times to allow the other person to negotiate jumps.
I remember that room.
And by that point in time, we actually weren't talking. We were using the bumper, or at least for me, it's the bumper. For you, it's probably the little right mouse button or something.
No, it's like F.
We were like highlighting spots, and it was like, eventually it was like, highlight, 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 and then you would be like, highlight, highlight. I was like, okay, now we got it. Okay, then we go, and we'd ran it, and it was fine.
That's awesome.
So how far did you guys get in co-op?
It's pretty early.
Yeah, I think we did.
I'd like to revisit this when you get to some of the later stuff to see if
it still
you can
works.
Do it. I think
possible.
It could. I think Valve is smart enough to be like, we'll give you the tools for
the
it.
The mime variant still works.
Yeah.
But I think there's like even a cool side conversation about how that adds another layer of difficulty to the game.
Oh yeah, and I agree.
And the mental challenge of like now not only do I have to figure out, like, we're both trying to figure out the logic of this puzzle, and now once we've figured out the logic of the puzzle, we have to figure out how to communicate it to each other without saying, dude, you press that button over there and the box drops. We take the box, we throw it through this portal. We put a portal over there and that portal then drops the box over here. And we put another portal there and it shoots it across to the launcher, which loads it up onto
What you're saying is that you can communicate by doing. Which is wonderful.
You can communicate by doing and by some illustration of like points, you know. Yeah. I think we like Portal.
It is.
You know,
I think it's the best game Valve has ever made.
See, that was just about what I was, because right after playing for a couple hours in the beginning,
episode 2,
I tweeted and I was like, man, this is really awesome, but Valve, where the hell is, I want more Half-Life. And now after finishing Portal 2, I'm like, I mean, of course, it's nice to want things, but I want both. Like,
I want both
worlds.
I'm glad you can make a decision on that.
No, dude, I want both also.
Everybody wants both.
And I love me some Half-Life.
Controversial opinions. Well, here's the thing. Here's what I was thinking while I was playing it. I was like, what, it's been 2 years since Portal came out? And they made this?
Mm-hmm. More than two, I think. Wasn't 2007 Portal?
I thought it was... Well, Orange Box is what?
I don't know. We'll look it up in the break.
Anyway.
It's been a little... 2007.
It gave me high hopes for episode three, because it's like, if they came up with this, and you know that they started from zero on Portal 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, Portal 1 was a surprise, I think.
And they also kicked out Left 4 Dead.
I've stopped calling it... I've stopped referring to it as episode three.
It's going to be three.
It's going to be three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, come on, at this point. Like, we've joked about that many times. All the episodic
ideas. That game is going to just own it. Own me.
Yeah, and Half-Life, what if they drop a portal gun in Half-Life?
Yeah,
what do you mean, what if?
Yeah, it's,
I mean, don't,
all
don't
signs
you sort
point
of figure
to.
That that's going to be the way it's going to go?
Well, yeah, but then, then...
All signs point to.
Then you would lose Portal.
October 2007 for Portal.
Yeah, I was right.
It's been
you were
long.
Right, yes. Oh. October 2007 for Portal.
So that's what?
That's a while.
3.5.
Yeah.
We don't want to make you wait 3.5 years for the next segment of this show. So what we'll do is we'll take a little break. And when we come back on the other side, we will talk about some Bethesda stuff. We will talk about fancy pants adventuring, evidently.
There's another big game that came out on Tuesday.
Is that a game or like a philosophical concept? Because I'm signed up for both.
Fancy pants.
Fancy pants adventure.
I actually played Portal 2 as a fancy pants adventure. Just by how I was dressed.
Yeah, it's quiet.
Wait, I thought you played your games with pants off.
Those are our fancy
pants. That's how
pants.
Fancy it is.
Hey-o! And then also coming up later, we've got Haunted Shores with Ahead on Our Way. It's a Final Fantasy VII cover in the music break. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back. Hey, the last few weeks we've seen Crysis 2, Portal 2, Mortal Kombat, Homefront, and a whole bunch more titles. Don't spend $60 just to play these games and then put them on the shelf only a few days later. You can rent all the games you want. It's easy. Sign up, select your games, put them in your queue on Gamefly.com. We'll ship them right to your door for free. There's no late fees. You can cancel anytime. So go to Gamefly.com, and we have, of course, a special trial offer for you. Now, our trial offer is a little different. Yes, you have to sign up for 1 month. Sign up for 1 month, and we'll hook you up with a second month for free. It's a buy one, get one free. That's code confirmed. Go to Gamefly.com, click on the little joystick in the upper right-hand corner, punch in confirmed, support weekend confirmed, and get games delivered right to your door with Gamefly. It's my pleasure to announce that Gamefly has been nominated for a 2011 Webby Award. And if you're not familiar with the Webbies, these are the Academy Awards for websites. And we've been nominated again this year. We're currently in second place and need your help to get into first. So if you would please go to webby.aol.com and vote for Gamefly. We're in the websites category, game-related section. So vote early. Vote often. And if you do so, Dave says that if you go by the Facebook page, he'll run some free t-shirts your way as a like contest amongst those of you who voted. So thanks very much. Appreciate your support for Gamefly, who makes Weekend Confirmed possible. Back, and not a moment too soon, because we still have a whole lot to get through. Hopefully the fine engineers over at Sony have, while we've been working, gotten PlayStation Network back online too, because so we're going to talk about the news. They've had a little outage issue, and it couldn't have come at a worse time. So we still have lots of stuff to get through. I'm going to do Skyrim now, because I know there's a lot of people who want to talk about Skyrim.
I just want to alert Brooklyn that we need to replace this. I might be drooling over the mic, so
we'll get you a bib.
Okay.
Good. So this is really challenging, because I have to say that after not saying anything about Skyrim and just doing the like video that was just not even a video at VGAs, was just like, you know, background. It's like, look, there's an embossed wall. It has dragons. Skyrim. Oh my god, game of the year. That like the amount of stuff they showed at this event was ridiculous. Like it was Andrew, you know how it is. Usually you go to these demos, and Billy, you know too, and you probably know to a degree also. It's like you go to these demos and it's like, here's your vertical slice, here's your, like, today we are going to tell you about X, Y, and Z, and that's it.
Here's one very particular aspect of the combat system.
So yes, there were walls, you know, in this, so to say, of like stuff he wasn't going to talk about. Like he didn't talk about faction relationships, and he didn't talk about guilds and the way your prestige was going to work in the world. But what was off the table didn't matter, because he Todd Howard, who's the director of the game, worked on, you know, obviously one prior to that, also Fallout 3, literally drove with a character and played for an hour in front of us, taking us through a walk through the forest, into town, all the way through a long dungeon, and fought a dragon at the end of it.
Was this a specifically tailored demo, or was it a portion of the actual game?
So clearly they had tailored this to where it fit, you know, to where it worked, so he could do it. One of the things that I didn't really get a clear answer on, and I thought this was really interesting, was that the quest that he took wasn't even a side quest. It was a sort of pop-up happenstance adventure, which is one of the things they've added into the world. And yet it still wound up with him battling a dragon at the end. So I think that there was some, you know, demo tweaking that they had done in the back end to set things up so he'd have good things to battle.
I hope every quest in this game ends with battling a dragon at the end.
Well, a lot of them are going to end with what?
Nah, I was going to say pop-up
happenstance. I saw that too.
It's the sequel to Fancy Pants Adventure.
Pop-up happenstance.
Fancy pants and pop-up happenstance. Sorry, go ahead.
We're going to talk about dragons a lot in a minute, but like the thing that the characteristic elements of Elder Scrolls, you know, scope and grandeur and this personal character that you have right off the bat was one of the things I think he wanted to really show off. So, you know, it opens and you're just on this forest path in the mountains, and he starts talking about how, you know, they started work on this back in 2006, right when they finished the last game. And although they got off on Fallout 3 for a while, one of the things they wanted to do was build their own engine for this game because, you know, they had previously used a third-party rendering engine. And like this is all their entire own creation now. And it's built around the concept of instead of figuring out how to control things and not render things, just saying from the beginning, you know, we're going to render everything. Like everything's going to be real and we're going to render it all, which of course has always been their deal. It's a little more difficult in the mountainous scene. So you're walking down this mountain path and he's like looking at some, you know, some little heather flowers by this side of the road. They're all pretty and everything. And of course, in the background, there's this giant mountain. And he's like, yeah, you can walk all the way to the top of that mountain. And it, as a matter of fact,
so awesome.
By the end of the game, you will have walked to the top of that mountain and ascended the 7,000 stairs. Yes.
I bet there's a dragon at the top.
Well, actually, you'll ascend the legendary 7,000 stairs to go to some temple-like area that's up there that ties into one of your powers that we'll get to in a minute. Because as he's walking down the pathway, of course, when the first thing that's happening, he gets attacked by some highwaymen because he wants to show off the combat system. And the combat system, like most people, and I guess this is, you know, I hate comparative to other games because if you haven't played the other game, it doesn't work. So I'll tell you the way it is, and then you'll tell me what game comes to mind. Right trigger is right hand. Left trigger is left hand. Put whatever you want to in each, and that's the way you play. So he starts off sword and board. Sword in one hand, shield in the other hand. Pulls the trigger with the shield and you know, hits it, then it's like a shield butt. If he pulls it and holds it, it's a shield block. Sword attack the same way. Not a lot of comboing to it. He's not going for a big combo structure. There is a movement element to it. However, once you got into combat, and this was one of the first things that really jumped out at me, you know how in Oblivion it seemed like when you fought, you'd like, dude walks up, another dude walks up, they stand there face to face and go, ick it, and like whack at each other? This is the opposite of that. It's very gladiatorial. It's very physical. It's like every time a swing hits you, you get knocked backwards. Every time you land one, you like really put yourself into it and push forward. The battle moves around the space.
Does it seem like you'll be mostly one-on-one with things or that you'll be dealing with groups of monsters?
That's hard to say. He did deal with some groups later on because, of course, you can also put magic in your hands. So it's very flexible to do whatever you want to. As a matter of fact, when you start your character, the only thing you will choose about your character is your race, gender, and the way you look. There's no more like being a spell sword or a rogue or any of that because you just do what you want to do. And whatever you do is what you become because there's no primary attributes in the game.
Pretty bold.
There's no strength. There's no dex. There's no, like, the only attributes, there's three attributes in the game: health, stamina, magicka. Those are the attributes.
Stamina gets used up when you do physical stuff. Magicka gets used up when you use magic.
That's
it.
And that's it. And then there's your health. And that is the entire system. There are 18 skills, and these skills are all related to what you do. And then those are what gain points as you get better with them. So,
I love it. I think this is awesome.
So they didn't get rid of the numbers. They just kind of transferred them over to another department.
The way he
explained it, they got rid of half of them.
The way he explained it is, it's a direct relationship of one to one now. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, if you were, say, a archer, then you were putting money, you're putting points into decks, and you're putting points into decks to ultimately wind up getting better at being an archer. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're wielding a bow, your bow skill goes up. Because that was what you were trying to get to in the first place.
So now, are you limited on armor and weapon choices based on your skill rather than your strength, et cetera?
Yes. I would presume that's the way they do it. He didn't actually get into that nitty-gritty of the specifics, but that would make sense.
What about... one of the big things from Oblivion is your strength determined how much you could carry. So I'm wondering how that all works. Obviously, details that are probably not in the scope of this demo.
We went for 2 hours and that didn't come up, and I'm like, oh, that was actually a pretty good question. I don't know. I don't know the answer to these questions. Stick to the script. Stick to the script.
I was not reading the script. I apologize.
Trust me, there's still plenty more to get through. This is a very in-depth demo. So that's the skill system. There's 18 skills. They took out the you can job them skills. So there's no more athleticism skill. You're not going to run around and
just
get
jump.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, that's fucking ridiculous. If you're an adventurer, you would be jumping and running anyway. There's no reason to have a skill for that. So in the example, now let's say you're wielding a sword. The more you wield a sword, your one-handed combat skill is going to improve. And as you gain ranks in that skill, you'll get better and better at it. Also, as you rank up that skill, there's still a leveling mechanism. So every time you rank up a skill, you get points that go towards your character level because you still have a character level. And these and leveling then feeds the next part of the system, which is perks. Mm. And you get perks based off your level that then let you go in and tweak things to fit what you want to do and how you're playing. So,
it's like Fallout perks,
yes.
Basically.
So back to the one-handed sword guy attack. Maybe one of the perks you want to go for because you're using a bladed weapon is enhanced bleeding damage when you attack someone, right? So that would be a perk. And once you leveled up, you'd start putting points into that perk. And then as you're wielding your sword, not only are you better at using your sword, you're also gaining the benefits of the perks that you put into using that with that sword. And a cool little twist, one of the gee whiz moments is to do all your perks, you go to the menu system and you look up to the heavens, and the perks are all arranged around your head as constellations.
That's cool.
And they're like little stars, and you like fill in like each dot of a perk is like another star in the constellation, and you're like filling out the constellations that are your sign.
That's pretty cool.
Which is really fucking cool. It was very gee whiz. It doesn't really matter, obviously, but it was really cool.
It's just one of those nice touches.
Yeah. So same thing would apply to magic. You can put magic in your hand. So right afterwards, he took the sword, the shield out of his hand, and put a heal spell in his hand, in his left hand, and a sword in the right hand. So now he's like running around and sticking things and healing himself at the same time.
Does this mean you could only ever have maximum of two spells at the ready at any given time?
No, actually. So they set it up sort of like almost the almost like a web browser sort of analogy, where you go into your menu system and you like the spells you want to use as your favorites,
and they friend you, and then they poke you, and you poke them back.
They post an embarrassing picture of you and tag yourself.
So basically, you have like a pull down menu on the side of the screen while you're active for left and right trigger, and that lets you adjust what's in there and what you've tagged in the menu system, so you don't have to stop.
So there is a quick swap.
Yes, there's like a quick swap system, okay. So you can like page through them and like with a D-pad go, I want to put heal over here, and I want to put fireball over here or chain lightning over here. Hmm. And of course, as you would think, like starting to think about this, if you equip the same spell in both hands, now you can cast a super version of it.
And it's like sweet.
It even comes with this like super cool like conjuration move where he like he's all like gesturing around and building this ball of magic energy in front of him before casting it.
Like Dragon Ball.
Yeah, it's really fucking cool. It is. Well,
it's train.
It is hard Dragon Ball. Nice, you ruined it.
Sorry.
God,
just a joke. All right, so the dialogue system.
So here's where we pulled back for a second also and showed that although it is still a first-person game and he loves it as first-person game, they're committed to making it also as good in third-person if you're into playing it third-person. And
Oblivion was not.
And from what he showed, at least especially with the character, the animation system is night and day better. Like super fluid, really, really looked good. And that was exciting until we saw the faces.
Oh, no. So is it just the faces?
Yeah, they still look weird.
Why do they have a problem with this?
I don't know. I don't know.
Everybody knows how to do faces. It's 2011.
They suffer worse than any game that I've encountered of Uncanny Valley, where like it's like,
Well, I don't even think it's Uncanny Valley.
I think it's Uncanny Valley.
There's a difference between Uncanny Valley and ugly. Just saying. No,
yeah, is it art or tech? Or both?
Dude, beats the fuck out of me. I don't know. I don't know. They have, like, their art is so good and everything else. They just...
See, this is a thing I can easily overlook, but it's odd to me that this is a constant issue that they hear about. They must hear about, yeah. And yet they still have a problem with it.
It might be even more glaring now if the animation's really good. Then it's just that one thing that's standing out that's not as good.
Does it still work the same?
It's a bunch of butter faces.
Does it still work the same way when you engage someone and it sort of zooms in?
You're like up in their face. Like, yeah. Sorry, like you keep, if only it was a video show, like you're like up in their face. No, actually, that's totally fixed, which is awesome. So now the menu system simply is a little overlay to the screen, and you still have complete freedom to look around the room.
Can you walk?
He walked around. So he walked into a.
So he can like be in the corner of the room, like, oh yeah. By the way, I'm curious about the house that you live in.
He didn't break it like that.
Your face scares me. I don't want to talk to you.
I imagine they must have some sort of proximity. I mean, they'd have to, right? Have some sort of proximity switch in there,
right?
You know, one of the things that they are big on is they call it the Radiant Story Engine, which
sounds awesome.
Which Todd copped to the Radiant is just their buzzword for random. But
could have called it the random
a few
story.
Things that they wanted to do to make the world a more vibrant world was all of the characters you encounter now in Skyrim are real, and I'm using the air quotes again. In other words, they all have lives, and they all have things that they're doing, and all the things that they're doing are real things. As a matter of fact, they're so real that they are things that you could go and do. Like he walks into this lumber mill area, and there's this dude chopping wood, and he's like, yeah, I could go chop wood with this guy, or I could kill him and chop wood for him.
That's not how you help people.
But
let me do that for you. Die.
Depends how sad his life is.
But the bigger point was that no longer is it a deal where you like walk into town at 3 o'clock in the morning and there's random people walking around like on some God knows what cycle and what the hell they're doing.
Good morning, sir. Glad to see you out today.
Like, what the hell is going on here? That's all been eliminated because they're all now in the story engine and doing story element things that work for whatever system they're working in.
This is like a throwback to the old PC.
Dude, it's Ultima. It is fucking Ultima.
It's like Ultima 5, where it's like you could chop down the wheat, then take it into and turn it into bread, and you know, and people will be doing all of that also. Well,
and as a matter of fact, someone asked, I think it was Russ Frushtick, who was always asking all these weird questions, like, "Can I kill the children yet?" I was like, "Russ, dude." The answer is no. You can't. You still can't kill the children. You can kill anybody else. You can't kill the children.
Smart choice.
You can go over and kill the people working in the lumber mill, and if you do, then not long after, the arrow supply in that town goes to hell, and when it and if it comes back, it'll be like super expensive because there's no longer a functioning mill in the town. My so
crazy pants.
That's kind of crazy. All of the quests, as opposed to Fallout, which got really random and people complained, oh, well, these quests are really random, they're really mechanical, all the quests are now handwritten. So they have game designers writing all of the quests, and the way they use the Radiant Engine now is instead of having it generate the quests, it generates the variables like a Mad Libs.
It assembles.
Yes, it assembles.
Oblivion had a lot of dungeons, but they were all sort of cookie cutter dungeons. You know, you could find 1,000.
Yep.
Is it the same kind of deal?
Over 125 dungeons, and the dungeons are still somewhat procedurally generated. Mm-hmm. However, they have an artist that's going in and tweaking all of the pieces to make them look good and not like, oh, well, this was just randomly shoved together. So, you know, you'll still have like the child kidnapped and huddled away in some dungeon adventure, mm-hmm. or you know, quest. But the way that quest will work now is you walk into town, and if the game decides that quest is active for you, it'll search through the children that are alive in the town still. Not the children. It'll find the child, like those are still alive. It'll search through the children in the town, and then of them, who their parent would be of the people that are alive, and it'll have like options. And then when you encounter that person, it'll give you the quest. And then it'll go out and look for dungeons that are in the area you're in that you haven't played in yet.
So it's not
like it's forcing you to go to those places, but if there are places in the environment that you haven't seen yet, then it'll keep track of those and say, oh, well, like we should help them go there. And it'll take you there.
This is making me want to go back and play Oblivion. I fucking love that game.
Yeah, but I don't know. After seeing this, I don't know if I could go back to it.
Wow, luckily I haven't seen this yet.
So So he goes into the shop, and he finds out from the shopkeeper that's an item, that an artifact's been stolen from him. I won't ruin, if you want to read the previews, I'm sure somebody's spoiled all that kind of stuff, but I won't, because the artifact's cool and, where it happens, and that's all cool. But anyway, he goes off to an adventure to find this, recover this artifact for the shopkeeper, goes to this dungeon, kills lots of things, many of them undead, and basically shows off now the stuff that you would think was really cool. Like, all the things that you could expect of this, you can do. Like, at one point he says, you can do the Gandalf, and he has, this giant green elven sword in one hand and a staff in the other. And the staff is, a staff of light. So he's, using the staff and, shoving it down the hallway and lighting up the hallway, and things go skittering. And then he, comes through with his sword, and he's like, fire, fire, totally. It was awesome.
Shall not pass.
Yeah, it was totally awesome. And then another time he, equips dual chain lightning spells in his hands and is just, in this, radical, I'm just nuking the shit out of everything with chain lightning.
Emperor Palpatine.
Yeah. Well, it was sort of Emperor Palpatine, yeah. Who had a really cool circle of protection spell that he cast, where, this glowing orb of, or this ring of, energy expanded out from him and knocked everything back. Like, really cool area crowd control spell. It was really awesome. So he gets to this little grotto and has to fight a zombie or ghost demon dragon priest.
You just threw every single word you knew about.
I was trying to think. It's like a dragon priest wraith, I guess. So think of it. It's a dragon
priest. He's also German.
He's a Nazi too.
Just saying.
Yeah.
So he kills this thing, which is like a big protracted fight, and he's in this grotto, and the grotto has this stone wall at the back of it, and he goes over the stone wall, and it has this really cool cryptic writing on it, and this is the writing of the dragons. And so your character is a dragonborn, and they're not going to explain a lot about what dragonborn is, but it means that you're born with a soul of a dragon.
Sweet.
And that you're anointed by the gods.
Love that.
Whatever the hell that means. And you're able to read these words, and you read the word, and this now gives you the other part of your combat skills, which is this new system they've introduced.
Just says growl, 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 burn. I don't get it.
The new system is shouts. Writing. And so you learn these shouts. There's 24 or about 24 of them in the game. And each of the shouts has three words to them. And they are essentially a secondary magic system that is your dragon magic. And the one that he used is a time stop. And it's mapped to the bumper. And it's contextual sensitive. So when you've just learned one word, of course, you tap the bumper and you get the one word and you get a short effect of that version. But once you've learned all three words, you can hold the button down to cast that and cast the three stages of it, depending on how strong you want the effect to be. And some of these are going to be really, he said, these are going to be the most powerful effects in the game. And some of them will have really, 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 really long cooldowns, but have really, really awesome, awesome effects.
Dude.
So he gets to the end, has to fight this dragon. And he fights the dragon, and he's a little overpowered for the dragon. But the thing that's pretty evident about the dragon fights is you're going to have to use everything at your disposal to be able to fight the dragons. They're going to be a big deal. And so someone says, so, how many dragons are there in the game? And Todd says, well, that there's dragons in the game. There's no number of dragons
all
in the game.
All of the dragons.
There are dragons. They are creatures dragons. In the game. There's no there's not a finite number of dragons in the
fucking
game.
Fucking Spyro's in this game, too.
Every dragon.
How many dragons in the real world? Exactly.
All of them. Right. And so he tells a story about how, in a recent build, he was around.
Sean Connery dragons in it. Freaking...
Wouldn't it be awesome?
Freaking How to dragons Train do Your talk. Dragon is in it.
Pete's in it.
Pete's in it.
The dragons do talk, by the way.
They do.
Yeah, the dragons
of course
do talk.
They do. They're writing. They're
As a
talking.
Matter of fact, he explained, and I've never heard this explanation, that dragon's breath is them talking. You ever heard that before?
Shitty conversationalists.
I know. Some of them, evidently some of them can speak common as well, so you'll be able to have conversations. So he says, this is a funny story. He tells a story
Good
about
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Or as we would say,
so he says he's out adventuring in a recent build, and these three dragons go flying by overhead, and he doesn't really think anything of it, and so I think he said maybe he did something stupid, shot his bow at them or something random or whatever. He's like, oh, it's no big deal, right, whatever. And then the dragons decided to aggro on him, and he's like, what the hell just happened? Chased him all the way back into town. So he's like, I'm going to get away from him. And he runs through the countryside using all his stuff, running, being chased by three dragons, gets confronted by the three dragons in the middle of town and wiped out by the three dragons. Hmm. So there's lots of dragons in the game. If you like dragons, I think you'll like the game.
This is exactly what made Oblivion so special, and Fallout to a certain extent as well, is those unpredictable, yep. I'm in my own story, incredible, rich world.
Sounds like tons of that. It was pretty awesome.
Wow.
They're trying to do mounts.
I want so bad.
He was very cagey about mounts.
Do you mean they're trying to do mounts?
I
want horses, and I want them armored.
Personally, I think that you'll get a mount, but I think it's going to be like a wyvern. I think they're trying to do flying mounts because Sweet. He was super cagey about it. He's like, well, you're not going to be able to fly dragons. I'm like, okay, next question.
What if one of your power word phrases is being able to fly?
Ooh, what if one of your power word phrases is being able to turn into a dragon?
Oh my god, you guys.
You're dragonborn.
Oh my god.
That would be, like, you could...
You're blowing my mind.
I can't want this game anymore,
you
darn it.
You just spoiled the end of Skyrim. Way to go.
Todd's like, that motherfucker!
Next game.
Yeah, next game. So
now, I heard two things.
Did that sort of work? Because it was so hard to, like...
Yeah, he did a good job.
The amount of stuff he went over in this demo was ridiculous. I mean, it's just absolutely
put it in me.
Ridiculous.
I want it.
Wow.
Put it in my eye holes and my ear holes.
Put it into your
every
ear
hole.
Everyone.
Now, the visuals look amazing, but it's a report came out this week that it's DX9.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Why are you trolling him?
Nerd.
I'm not trolling him, asking.
Nerd.
I mean,
does it matter?
Yeah, yeah. So you know what? I didn't publish Obviously that story because I knew someone was going to do that. The bottom line of it is that the way that they use shaders and the shader language is based off of DX9. However, if you're running DX11, there are performance streamline advantages in there that will make the game run better. Are we doing the advanced tessellation that DX11 has? Not right now. But
okay, I'm not trolling. I'm just bringing it up.
Such a weird little technical point.
If I could only have one.
Are you European?
Dragons don't care about tessellation.
I know.
There is no word in dragon for tessellation.
That's right. So that's pretty much it. Soul gems for enchanting. To make the world more real, not everything in the world is aggro on you automatically. So like he's starting out on his adventure. He's like going up into the mountainside and this frost giant goes by him. And we're all like, dude, are you going to fight the frost giant? And he's like, no, the frost giant doesn't care about me. I'm just a little pipsqueak human. He didn't give a shit. And the frost giant just kind of walks by doing his thing. Todd's just kind of standing off the side of the road like, I'm going to let the big guy like go down the path. And he just goes on about his way. It's like, all right, that's kind of cool. Yeah, that's it. I don't know, man. It's fucking ridiculous. Like, the game is... The sad part is I can see the same thing happening to me with this that happens to me with all of his games. I'll play
Not me, dude.
I'll play it for 10 hours on the main quest.
On Oblivion.
I'll play it for 10...
I'll own my world.
I'll play it for like 10 hours on the main quest, and then I will inevitably get pulled into the other stuff, because that is the way they build it. As a matter of fact, he even says they conscientiously do that. He's like, we don't ever want you to go to bed.
that. Well, the way the Radiant system sounds, that's the design of it. Like, he's like, this random thing. Yeah. We're going to pull you over
here. He's like, we want to give you two or three other things to do before you finish the thing that you're doing and never be able to like go to bed and go like, oh, I'm at a good stopping spot. He's like, we're not going to give you a good stopping spot.
That is evil.
Yeah. So what'll happen to me
sleep so much?
Is I'll get pulled into a side story and then I'll go do some stuff and I'm like, oh, the world's really cool. I'll be adventuring. And then I'll want to go back to the main story and I'll have pulled so far away from it that I'll be like, I don't even remember what I was doing, and I'm not that into it anymore.
That's okay. Not everyone is meant to save the world.
Dude, why don't you just play better at it? Yeah.
Stop sucking so bad.
All right. Yeah,
dude. All right, I got lots of other games to talk about, right?
All
right,
Mr. Fancy Pants.
Fancy Pants is cool.
Fancy Pants.
That's cool. I play Mortal Kombat.
I love the Mortal Kombats.
I'm very impressed. Why did it take them so long to fix Mortal Kombat?
Because they were under the gun every time that they, you know, I love Midway and I love the history of Midway. I'm from the Midwest, but they were under the gun. Like, they're like, here you go. You have this amount of time. And they weren't under that. I mean, they were still under pressure with this game, but they didn't have to hit Holiday.
Keep in mind, Midway for a long time was on the financial ropes, and so the message the Mortal Kombat team was getting was, make us a mainstream hit. Mm-hmm. Make us a mainstream hit, okay? We need you to do things... Wait, first of all, you can't be M. You cannot be M. We need you to be, you know, T-rated, and we need you to, like... There's all these other things going on. You should be appealing to them.
The M-ness isn't what makes this game good.
No.
Is it the throwbacks?
But it is part of the game.
It's part of the game.
It is part and parcel
of
the game.
I mean, those X-ray attacks are awesome. They're fun. Very cool.
You don't seem that convinced, Garnet.
Well, yeah. I and the name just flew out of my head, but it harkens back to the Tekken adventure game.
Nina?
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Those X-ray attacks.
That's where I remember that from.
Yeah. I reviewed that game back in the day.
We put that on GMR cover.
It's a very artistic cover, the art.
I remember that. It was like silver, and she was all like in purple outfit.
Caroline did a good job with that cover.
Of course. I mean, but needless to say, X-ray attacks.
I'm just so glad that they managed to capture exactly what's so great about the first two Mortal Kombats, make it feel modern.
We interrupted it, to you. What was the thing about the first Mortal Kombat that was so cool?
I think it comes down to how it controls and the balance of the moves. And some of the moves in this new game are a little unbalanced, like those X-ray attacks. They take off half your energy in one hit. But
they are blockable.
They are blockable.
They are blockable and escapable.
The game feels like Mortal Kombat, and I actually enjoyed Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe because I'm such a comic book nerd, but it never felt like Mortal Kombat to me. It felt like this other thing that didn't really ever... And this game, man, it feels right. Oh. And that's something that is so difficult to pin down, but I don't know why it took them so long, because it's...
Well, there's a lot of it, I think, that comes from just how solid every blow you land feels.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
But that's how the first games were, you know?
It really, like, has that punch to it, where it's like...
I also don't understand why it took so long for...
Well, it's also 2D.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 2, 3, you know,
yeah.
2.5D.
Two-thirds D.
I don't understand why it took so long for a fighting game to get story mode right. Like, this game... Now, I will caveat that and say the writing is silly. Mm-hmm. I will grant you that, if that's what you're laughing
hey,
about.
Hey, you're talking to somebody who just went with some of these people Mortal to see Kombat. Mortal Kombat in the theater.
Right. The writing is silly, but you know, in a self-conscious way. But this is how you do a story mode in a fighting game. This is exactly how it should have always been done.
Explain it a bit to me, because I haven't played it yet. And I know Soul Calibur single-player stuff was pretty good.
It's a seamless integration between the fighting and the storytelling. And basically what you're in is in a cutscene that is fully 3D rendered in engine, and the characters are having interactions and dialogue, and you each chapter of the game you're playing as a different character, so you're following that person's section of the story. So you start out with Johnny Cage, and Johnny Cage is having interactions with people, and though inevitably each of those interactions leads to a fight. And he will get into an argument, and then it will seamlessly go into a fight, and you will do three rounds of
the
fight.
It's very much like the movie.
So it's
very much like
the scene. Yeah.
There's like a scene happening, and then all of a sudden you come running into the arena with each other, and the fight is on.
It's great. I mean, it's funny because everything that happens, like people will be hanging out in a bar, and one guy will bump into another, and then what's his name, the head of the Mortal Kombat tournament, will come around the corner and go, "Oh, a challenge!" You know, and then like you're in
Bud
a fight.
Bud Selig?
Yeah. But it's great. I feel like
those
I'm
Dodgers
on...
are mine,
dude. If Bud Selig was in Mortal Kombat, I would cry. That'd be so good.
It's so well integrated and into the engine, into the you feel like you're just in a story that happens to have these fights in it, and that's the game mechanic part. It's great. It's like exactly
I
how
super
Street
enjoy
Fighter
it.
Should have been done.
I'm having a blast with it. I think that it's. It's really open with the controls. Like, if you've been playing Capcom stuff for a while, as soon as you get the rhythm approach that they use in this, you'll be able to hit every combo every time. There's no, like that's not a problem. It is still, it is a little dial-a-combo-y in that, you know, once you
sure.
know, I mean, once you know the combos, it is very much like bun dun 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 dun. But that's cool because there's ways to interrupt them. There's way to, like you said, build up your powers and use the X-rays. Mm-hmm. But if you want to stop before that, there's a three-part bar. We can also use the block and the block and reverse thing, which is really quite cool also. So there's a lot of strategy goes in there. But I think that the part that you said initially is really what sells it for me, which is that the fights are just so visual and so powerful. And like there's so much crate. Like these guys, like it is mortal. Combat like these guys are like not like it is amazing like
and it feels like those first games and I will let me try to explain a little bit better what I mean by that. I feel like Mortal Kombat came out when Street Fighter 2 was ruling the roost, and Mortal Kombat came out and it had these photographed human beings mm-hmm. doing moves, and a lot of the move lists were comprised of moves that a real human could be photographed doing. You know, obviously those were manipulated, but the kicks, for example, were, you know, a real person leaping into the air and sticking their leg out. And so, like, the jump attacks always felt less over the top than Street Fighter because those real human beings had done that, and so their legs were kind of bent farther down than you might draw. You know how Ryu jumps in the air and he sticks his leg out and he's a perfectly perpendicular to the ground?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, no human being does that, right? And so when Liu Kang jumps in the air...
You've never seen me do the sprinkler.
And that's,
I've
that's,
seen you do the sprinkler. Do not advise it.
This game has that feel to it, you know? And even the way the 3D models are animated feels more like those... real human being photographs manipulated like the first game. They just got that feel down right. And it's a throwback and a push forward at the same time, just as Street Fighter IV, I think, in its own way, for that franchise, did the same thing.
That's an interesting comparison.
I was talking with Patrick Klepek this morning about it, and he's raving about it. And he said something that kind of makes me want to play it. It's a fighting game for people who hate fighting games.
I don't know about who hate. But I would definitely, yeah, I see where it's coming from. Well, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's just inherently fun. It's inherently fun, and it's not a matter of just the technical element of learning the frame-by-frame timing. However, it does reward you, and you do definitely as you get to, like, later, especially if fighting later guys in the story mode or in the arcade mode, reward you for at least going through the effort of learning a character, learning their strong attacks, learning their powerful attacks, learning when they want to block, learning are they good at closing, are they good at range, how to handle a range attacker, because there are, as a lot of people know, like, there's a lot of guys in Mortal Kombat that can be pretty cheap.
Oh yeah,
there's a lot of number, there are a number of pretty cheap teleporting and
the number of characters alone means that it's not balanced. I mean, it's just wildly,
so it does still reward you for learning that, but it's in a well, here, Andrew, have fun with the game, like,
right.
Get in, have some fights, knock the head off a few people, get some blood, like, have a good time, and then if you like it, find the character you like, and once you find the character you like, okay, now you know what, if you learn how to play him a little better, you'll have even more fun with him.
Okay.
I do have a big gripe, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, because I may very well be, but
you're wrong.
I went into the mode selection because I hooked up my arcade stick. And I went to the options and selected different controller layouts. They have four.
Uh-huh.
Controller layout 1, 2, 3, and then, of course, 4. And as far as I could tell, that's all the information I'm given. Am I
1, 2, 3, and 4?
I'm in controller layer 3. Like... So
sweet.
I have no idea what that means.
You probably just have to go to the button mapping.
I did. And I couldn't see any change when I selected between control layouts, and then I was like, well, maybe it's probably in the documentation that comes in the, of course, no documentation that comes with it. It's just a flimsy little piece of paper that gives you your warnings about sticking your tongue in the outlet, you know. That's all it's got.
And your online code.
And your online code. Of
yes,
course.
And your online code.
So unless I'm completely just missed it, there's got to be that's just bad.
I think the internet is about to help you out.
I'm sure I'll be smacked down. But.
Internet, help Jeff Kanata out. How can he configure his joystick so that he can get most maximum pleasure?
Well, what did you just tell me?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, Lord.
But it's awesome, man. I did not expect to like it. I've been fooled so many times with this franchise where they're like, well, this is the one where we're doing the reboot, and we're gonna bring back the old glory of this franchise. They've said that the last three iterations.
I gave up after 3. I sold that thing back to Funko Land.
Whoa.
Yep.
Well, this one is the one. You definitely should try it out.
It's awesome.
You know what? We can play it tonight. I have it in my house.
All right. Done.
All right. Stick around. When we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about a few more games, and then we're going to do some warning stuff, including talking about, could an everyman game really be fun? That's in response to something you wanted to talk about, Jeff. Remember, like, can a guy who's just a guy be a good character, protagonist in a game? So
it's just this guy, you know?
Just this guy. Anyway, stick around. We'll be back with more Weekend Confirmed after this.
In the future, humanity has reached out to the stars, and bounty hunters such as yourself administer justice for corporations as they take over planets
in the imperial doctrine of the human race.
Yeah, like, you know, a couple of centuries from now, humanity's expanded out to
space.
So hunters, I mean, what's the whole premise? I don't know if it's those castles or
space marines.
I've heard of them.
Like, the death penalty's not there.
Space marines.
Del Rio's a shotgun guy.
Oh, I like being nimble and quick. Shotguns, pistols, some lasers.
Lasers?
Yeah.
Damn it, I didn't know the flamethrowers were going to beat me up like that. Jeff walks up to this guy with a machine gun, is like, whap, whap, takes him down, whap, whap. Takes him down. I think I'm going to put you in heavier armor. Like, I had lost one guy. I'd lost Delria. I'd lost you already.
Whap, whap. To his credit, though, he did say, go on without me, guys. I will die so you can live.
You have one shot killed a bunch of dudes.
Whap, whap. Takes him down.
As you can tell, story is a big selling point for this game.
Whap, whap.
Whap, whap.
Sweet. Oh, my goodness. That sounds like the soundtrack to go with some trailer for a movie pitch.
I'm going to put you in heavier armor.
I'm going to put you in heavier armor. Hey, coming up in the news section at the end of the show, we have information on the wrath of fans that has descended on Portal 2 on user-submitted reviews, because PC fans are some... segments of the PC fan world are not so happy with the Portal 2's.
Wrath.
The wrath! I don't know.
Internet wrath makes me laugh.
Whap, whap.
Internet whap, wrath. Whap, all right, whap. So we did not negotiate ahead of time. What other games should we talk about before we leave games behind?
Fancy Pants Adventures. Right. It's why I'm here, to listen to Jeff talk.
It's awesome. Anyway, it's awesome.
Fancy
it's great.
Pants Free Adventures.
It's great. It's yeah, platformer, wonderful art style. It's like squiggly hand drawn world, tons of customization.
Okay, so
4-player co-op.
I don't even actually know what Fancy Pants Adventure is. I will admit to this.
But it started out as a flash game online.
Is it on PC?
Now it's
XBLA.
It's XBLA and PSN. I'm playing it on the PlayStation. Although I'm glad I got it now. Before. Yeah, it's a platformer, kind of zoomed out, crazy. I can't think of a game that's a great comparison, but there's tons of them.
There are parts of it that reminded me of Sonic, though, because you can do kind of wall runs.
Absolutely.
And like loops and stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of momentum-based stuff where you have to get up ahead of steam before you can get to a jump pad that'll launch you way up into the air, and you're collecting these squiggly lines. So when you get hit by something, you lose some of them in a Sonic-esque way. So there's a lot of influence there. And you're collecting, you know, little items to outfit your guy. He comes with fancy pants, but you can change the color of his pants. You can put hats on him and give him a weapon. You have a little sword, but you can use like a pencil or a fork right from the start, and you get lots of others. And the way this is a plus one to the fancy pants that was a Flash game is that now there's 4-player co-op, which they never had before. Which adds a whole new level of zaniness to the proceedings, because you can knock into each other in a very, you know, new Super Mario's kind of way. You can knock into each other and cause chaos.
Like
and
Castle Crashery?
Yeah. So, well, it's not so RPG-y as okay. Castle Crashery. It's much more a platformer. It's much more Super Mario Brothers. But Super Mario Brothers plus a speed element, a Sonic kind of speed element. Really fun, you know, in that kind of... frustrating, can I get to that next platform to get that extra squiggly bit way? And there's enemies that you jump on their heads. I mean, it's very much a platformer. Great look to it, because it's all hand-drawn silliness, and it's got a sense of humor to it. There's tons of levels.
In the big scheme of things, would you choose to play this over many of the other ones that are out there? Other
Absolutely,
platforms?
I would. So you I literally think it's like great. It. Yeah, I really like it a lot. Yes.
Cool.
Moving on.
I like that. Moving on. Well, Fancy Pants Adventures, actually, I'm kind of intrigued now.
It's great. It's
like
very
hand,
well
I like
done.
The hand-drawn idea. I do yeah. like hand-drawn quite
it's
a bit.
It's like stick figures.
Yeah, that sounds...
Yeah.
I kind of like that. What other games should we talk about?
I don't know.
We have...
You're the host.
I'm trying to negotiate here, because we have lots of other... We have, lots of listeners that we could talk about, or we could talk about Rage and Prey 2 and, Gears of War 3 beta. Anyone play the Gears of War 3 beta?
Nope. I did.
And what do you guys think?
It's Gears of War.
It is. But it works well.
It works great.
And it's a little more hectic.
Gears 2 had online issues.
Connectivity. To me, it goes a step further than just connectivity. It runs really smoothly, and it keeps up with the pace of play very, very well.
And leveling up and perks sort of things. And
yeah. But I what kind of perks?
There are perks. I didn't unlock any. I'm not very good. I'm more of the meat shield when it comes to playing Gears.
This is just not why I play Gears. Like, I'm not excited about the like leaping around dive roll fiesta party that is what online has turned into.
Yeah, that's actually my complaint, is that at least at the moment it's turned into dive roll fiesta. That's a good way to put it. It's dive roll fiesta. Like, literally, gun sounds, and everybody on a team, you can tell if you're on a team that has people to play before, because everyone starts smashing A button and dive rolling at the enemy, and then you, like, get into these mix-ups that are really, like, weird, like, tumbling matches with guns. It's like
a Cirque du Soleil routine.
Cirque du Soleil of death.
And then, to further complicate how screwed up it is, there's a sawed-off shotgun in the game that's a one-shot kill.
Yeah, and you start with it.
Yeah, and you start with it.
It's not like a mode, like a one-shot kill mode?
No, it's like a one-shot kill. So there's like two things happening all the time now. You have like...
The Nasher? Isn't it called the Nasher?
No, the Nasher's the bad one.
Oh,
the double-barrel shotgun is the one you want. Like, right. The reload is really bad on it, but it doesn't matter because like all you have to do is go, bam, oh, you're dead, which is super freaking annoying in this game.
There's proximity with it, though.
Yeah,
well, there's proximity and aiming, I'm sure, but...
So here's the two things that are happening I found in the matches I've been playing that like I've just sort of chilled very quickly on the game about, is that everyone just sort of runs at each other and it very quickly becomes, like you said, running, tumbling, jumping match. Mm-hmm. And then there's always a few people who hang back and just like literally camps a corner with the shotgun waiting for someone to go around the corner, because you come around the corner and they're hiding, boom, you're dead.
Yeah.
And that's just not very fun. I don't know.
Yeah.
So we don't seem very enthused about Gears of War 3.
Well, I'm excited about Gears of War 3. The multiplayer.
Yeah, it's a beta of a multiplayer.
It's not.
It's a beta. That's a good point. It's a beta of a multiplayer. But it does sort of, to me, reinforce the whole, like, how many freaking online games with dudes running around with guns shooting each other do I need?
One.
1,000 more, I'm pretty sure, coming out in the next 2 years.
And maybe there's people who like the roadie run part. Like, the reason people dive roll is because if you get in roadie run, remember, you don't have any real peripheral awareness. Like, you're, like, stuck and it's very hard to steer, which is part of the mechanic of the game. But I don't see nearly as much, like, running and then getting in. Like, I was playing it first, like, run, get in cover, look around, shoot, run, get in cover, look around. No. This is more like just run at each other, dive roll, maneuver, shoot. Hopefully you get close, pull out your double barrel shotgun, kill
them. These are random pickup teams?
Yeah.
Do you see it being different? Playing coordinated?
Well, it seems like the maps themselves are smaller and more confined and more kind of...
They're more dense.
Yeah, hoping to get into situations where you're just right up on them quickly.
Yeah.
Because I remember Gears being a lot of like, where are they? Let's find them. Let's get to the thing. And I mean, I played a lot of multiplayer in Gears 1 and 2, but it didn't feel quite so hectic as this.
You know, one thing they're doing that's really good that I didn't notice in the beta is their positional audio is really good.
Mm-hmm.
You can absolutely use the sound of gunfire to guide you through the level to where the firefight's happening at any given time. Really, really easily. And it gets like how well they've mapped out the occluded sound and all that. But yeah, you can definitely like roll out of your spawn point and go, okay, I need to go over that way and to the left a little bit, and they're probably behind that wall. Or over here to the right, and there's something, oh, I can hear them coming this direction. Like, that part's quite good. I don't know.
I want to play it some more.
Yes, I want to play it some more too. I played like two or three nights of it in between like that, and like I was also playing SOCOM, and we'll talk about SOCOM later. It's like, so far I have only played public matches of Respawn SOCOM, and as I was scolded by a couple of people on Twitter, that's not the way to play it, and I should have remembered that. You got to play the real way to play SOCOM, which is no respawns, because like the ones with respawns, it's grenade spam, crazy, ridiculous. Awful.
Tell me how awesome Clash of Heroes HD is, because I love Clash of Heroes on the DS.
Totally awesome. And I'm saying this having not played Clash of Heroes on DS, but coming into it new, it's one of my new late night games where I need to stop myself. Like, I can't do one more battle because it's...
What is Clash of Heroes?
Might and Magic. It was my portable game of the year last year.
It says HD. Does that mean it's on this device?
No, it's
sitting
on the
right here.
Arcade of Xbox Live.
Sitting here. Mentioning it.
No one's listening, Jeff. Your mic has never been turned on for this entire
run of the show.
It explains a lot.
I thought I heard something.
No, it's a puzzle / strategy game. You align units into groups of three. If you align them vertically, they become an attack formation. If you align them horizontally, they become a defense wall. And they all bump up when you align them. And you can only move the units in the back. So you kind of have to do this positioning puzzle aspect of it, and you have to link attacking units together to do more powerful things. You have to put like two or four units in the back of a more powerful unit to charge it up. And it's all this like linking and just kind of optimizing your formation. And it's really, awesome. Really good.
Awesome. Perfect DS game. I'm curious how it translates to it. I mean, because there's a perfect like tap that, slide it over here mm-hmm. kind of situation.
It's so. Really easy. You know, just use the A button. And
it sounds like it would be a perfect iPad game, actually.
Yeah.
Well, it's also great for the DS because two screens, it makes sense because the opposing army is on the top screen and mm-hmm. your army is on the bottom screen.
That's cool.
And you're only ever touching your army. So having that be on the bottom screen makes a lot of sense. It's another one of those things where it's like thinking about that going to the 3DS makes me go, things are going to be different, man. Things are going to be different because the 3DS is built so differently than that. Anyway, I'm imagining on your
a big screen on a couch, it looks really nice. The art's really nice. The sound's really nice.
Do they make use of the width that they've got now?
Nothing that really springs to mind. Mm. Your information is kind of on the right side, but it's just an expanded battlefield.
Awesome. Mm. Great game. Great game.
So, Andrew, let's do one more. Okay. Do you think Prey 2 or Rage?
Let's do Prey 2.
Ooh.
Okay. Because I know your history with Prey.
There was just a bunch of people listening to this show screaming out there, Rage! Rage! Please, Rage!
I was 50-50.
Yeah. All right, Prey 2. Go for it, too.
Yeah, but you're biased. You went to Madison.
That's true.
Rage, that's true.
Rage single player is amazing.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about
Prey
2.
Yeah, hey, I said Prey 2.
So Prey 2.
Not a good start.
Well,
I guess I got it.
So I talked to Chris, like, remember when I did the cover story back mm-hmm. in the back of the day on Prey, and I talked to Chris again, and he's like one of the co-founders of Human Head, and he made an interesting point to me about why this game is such a departure. It's because, you know, like, there was a tremendous amount of baggage with Prey,
mm-hmm.
and this is...
Then why do a sequel to that? Sorry, go ahead.
That was my question. And so my question after after this explanation, which you obviously see where it's going, of like, now this is our chance to do our game, right?
Yeah.
Is then, well, why do you even worry about calling it Prey? And the reason you can't worry about calling it Prey is that, well, there are parts of, if you're going to do something in that similar vein, then you've already written all this canon. You've already written like all of this universe of worlds and interactions and all of the things that are going to be happening in the world and how humanity interacts and relates with the universe. And if you have that piece, why not just build from there? So
yes. I guess I just don't think that there's a huge audience that is like, oh yeah, I remember that franchise so fondly. Or,
well, you won't have to remember the franchise because Prey 2 is a completely, wholly different experience. There are no
weird. Which makes the naming yeah. of it even
there stranger. Are no sphincter doors.
What?
Oh.
There are no portals. And there's no gravity. There's no Native American. There's what? No spirit walking.
There's literally nothing that made that first game what it is. Literally. That's
about Don't Fear the Reaper.
Yeah.
It was literally...
That's true.
So
bring it back.
There's a jukebox at least.
Yeah, there's a jukebox, right?
Let me give you the story. The background to Prey 2 is that, much like Tommy was picked up by the orb in the first game, a U.S. Marshal was also picked up, like also wound up on the orb. And at the end of Prey, of course, Tommy like wins the battle, saves Earth, and like the orb's destroyed. And although they weren't saying how, this Marshall guy also manages to get himself off the orb before it gets destroyed. However, instead of returning to Earth, he winds up on a planet on the other side of the universe. And as our story begins, our intrepid hero has become a human bounty hunter on an unruly alien planet.
He's hunting his own kind?
Literally nothing to do with
the most
game.
Dangerous game?
No. Like, no, there's not even his own kind, because there's not a lot of humans in the world, because keep in mind, he's on the other side of the fucking galaxy.
Oh, so he is a human.
He's a human. He's a human who is a bounty hunter.
The humans are not bounty.
That has prey?
On this foreign planet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So prey, because he's a bounty hunter.
Well, no, because he's preying.
Sure.
On...
If I completely detach myself from the series, does it look cool?
The world looks really cool. The world has a very Like, they're obviously going for, like, the touchstone people will relate to off the bat is that noir sci-fi
Blade Runner
look. Yeah. But it's much more Anachronox if you ever played Anachronox.
Oh, I love that game.
Like, it's very low city, sort of dirty, with like cool neon.
That was a great game.
And great spaces. Now, the other thing about this is that it's also not a linear shooter. It's an open world game, of course, because, you know, who doesn't think of Prey as a human bounty hunter?
Bizarre,
so it's a human bounty hunter on the other side of the world in an open world shooter game.
You know, it makes me think.
Prey 2.
It worked for Red Faction.
Hmm.
You know, like,
Well, I mean, there was still Mars involved.
True.
I mean, it's not like we went completely off the rails here.
So bizarre.
You know, another note that I wrote to myself was it was sort of Judge Dredd looking, lower city sort of look to it. So he gets all of these missions and he's able to basically go through the world and he doesn't. It's interesting, like, because they're trying to keep the focus on being a shooter. They're not going too far down the BioWare-esque sort of reputation thing, but they are doing reputation as a modifier to what happens in a quest line. So, you know, if you make friends or make enemies, then it'll alter the way game plays out. But they're not trying to make it to where, well, once you become enemies of these guys, you're never going to be friends with them ever again. So you'll be able to see the entire game. They want to keep the focus still on being a shooter.
Okay.
If that makes
sense.
Just
sounds like a half-assed attempt at morality.
I wasn't really sold on it either. I have to say I was a little skeptical of that part because if you're going to do morality or if you're going to do like relationships,
right,
then relationships matter. But...
So the open world,
but to them, relationships might matter. Like, let me give you an example. In one of the demo missions that he ran, he goes to a arms dealer to get some information, and he has the option of paying the arms dealer off, running like a side mission for him, mm-hmm, or strong arming him. And the effects of what he does then only has an impact to the extent of what the arms dealer will do with him later. So he strong arms him,
mm-hmm,
right? And by strong arming him, then the arms dealer says, well, you're going to have to make that up to me down the road later. Whereas if he had paid him off, then instead of getting to that, you're going to have to pay me off later down the road, he would have gotten those missions later on when his reputation is improved. And then the arms dealer would have contacted him and said, hey, I have some missions I'd like you to do for me. But you still ultimately will get those missions.
So it's more about like choice and variance aside from morality. Like, it's not like, oh, I'm good and bad. It's like, oh, this is going to be.
Yeah, it's more about choice and variance.
Consequence.
Yeah, choice and
variance. This seems to put it. Is a monster departure from the first
game. It is a monstrous departure
from
the first
game. How does
it was so. Like, it was so hard to wrap my head around it because, like the shooting action looked good. Actually, it was pretty cool. He rolled the whole game with his pistol. And actually, I thought it would be really cool if he, like, if the game was a pistol based game. It's not. It has tons of weapons.
Sure.
One of the things that they are doing that I thought was pretty neat is that there are a number of special weapons like you would expect in a futuristic sort of world, like mini missiles and lasers and that kind of stuff. And those are all mapped as a secondary fire, but you still keep your main weapon out. So if you have like shoulder rockets or something like that, you can still fire those without having to like switch weapons. I thought that was pretty cool. That's a little, cool. Nice little touch.
So how open worldy is it? Is it just you can pick which mission you do next? Or are there vehicles?
There were vehicles. It was all like urban interior spaces, but it's very open worldy, a la Batman. You know, where he has the equivalent of a detective vision. But here the conceit for the game is that he has because he's a bounty hunter, he has like his bounty hunter gear, and so he can scan people until he finds the dude who like lights up orange because there's a bounty on him.
Sure, that makes sense. Sure,
it's the future. It's the future. Can't you see the glowing aura around Billy? There's a bounty on that guy. We got to take him in.
Is it the future or is it a different dimension, different world?
I don't know. It's the other side of the universe.
Other side of the universe where the future is. I want to go on record and say I think the title of this game is going to do more harm than good.
I don't disagree. I think they have a very tough sell.
If this had come out as a new IP, yeah, it would be interesting and, you know, something...
Would it? Because maybe. That's the problem is I pushed very hard on, like, what is, you know, like, you go back to Prey, And there were some, there were like certain things that you're like, oh, you got portals, you got this cool Native American character, you've got the gravity defying stuff. Like those became signature elements that they were trying to sell. And then, you know, for better or for worse, people made fun of it, but you had the sphincter doors and everybody was like, ah, oh, it's fucking Bray right there. It's the asshole doors.
You remember it.
Yeah.
Like,
you'll never forget it.
you murder
your asshole door.
You get to murder your girlfriend at the end of the game. It's
spoiler.
Awesome.
That was
Spoiler. Too soon, dude.
Drop the bomb.
People are going to go back and replay that first one because they're getting ready for, they don't want to be lost when they start the second one.
Dude, did you see how much weight she had put on?
Oh, Jesus, man.
God. No.
Actually,
no.
He's
that's not cool.
Factually true, but whatever.
Not cool. Not cool.
It's good. Like, I really like the first game, and when I gave it
a 9.
I'm gonna fucking throw something at
you. I'm glad you said it, because I was going to. Someone had to.
I totally agree with what you said, though. Having it named Prey. Like, because you think of all those things, and none of it's there.
I was hoping you wouldn't choose it, because the challenge, really, is to give you something more than that to hang your hat on to describe it by, because that really was it. It's like you're going into clubs and using your scanner to find the dude who has a bounty on him. And then once you try to stop him, you can go and try and talk to him, but eventually he's going to run. He sends some thugs at you. You fight the thugs. A chase ensues. Now you race through the city. You're
multiply
chasing him.
Multiply this times 50.
But that doesn't,
I'm sure there'll be other things to do.
But if his focus is being a shooter...
It's focus is being a shooter.
This is like a mission-based game that also has shooting elements. It's not like a running gun, you know.
No, but so it's not set up. It's not set up with like corridors and events. There are places that they will take you to. Because I asked them about that. I said, you know, you guys did a lot of set pieces, and they're like, no, you know what? When we're doing this, we can't really do those set pieces. So we use the quests to establish some spots where we know you will be, and then do anything that we want to do that's more dramatic around that. But it did close with a giant like. Brumac sort of monster thing crashing through a wall coming after him. So there's still going to be some grandiose enemies and stuff, but it was just like the whole thing is such a departure, like Jeff said, from Prey, that the name alone is just sort of like
it's a liability. It's not a benefit.
Could be.
I think
could be liabilities and benefits. Jeff, so we're talking about these games, and we've talked about shooters a lot. And we recently talked about dissonance in games and whether or not, you know, whether or not having all that killing can make a game that you can really be drawn into. Bring the Rain 4 said, about the dissonance in games, I don't think it's just limited to killing, while it is ridiculous, but to characters' other abilities. To use Uncharted as an example again, what average guy can jump 20 feet in a single bound? I would love to see a game where the developers found out what a normal person could do and then use that to make the levels for stuff that could be done by normal people but would still be cool.
That sounds like an incredibly difficult challenge for a game designer.
Would it still be cool?
I don't know. Falling 5 feet, spraining your ankle, having to play the rest of the game with a sprained ankle? It could be. I'm sure some guy out there is like, I have an idea for that.
Ow!
And it could be good. But
God.
Like Heavy Rain style. That happens in your office. Oh, I got to get my health insurance information.
The sprain gauge.
What happened to that freaking disaster game where the disaster happened and you have to like, I guess it's not happening anymore because the disasters really happen in the world.
Disaster Report 4 that was canceled?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't work.
I like the idea of something really, really authentic, you know, some sort of, yes, you are in a situation that could really happen and you have to freaking MacGyver your way out of it in a very normal human being kind of way.
You're back on the MacGyver thing.
I am?
You like this MacGyver game idea.
I liked the show.
I want to see the MacGruber game. MacGruber. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure that the like sprain jokes aside. I mean, isn't it sort of a fantasy world?
Metal Gear Solid 3 tried that.
Metal Gear Solid 3. Yeah.
There was the whole medical system. You had to take care of yourself after you broke some bones and ate some bad snake meat. A lot of people didn't like that part of the game.
Hardcore Fallout. New Vegas, right? With your freaking radioactivity's always bothering you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, got to deal with it.
You can have survival aspects, but I don't know if you can make survival aspects necessarily fun.
Yeah, I'm...
San Andreas, yeah, you had to eat stuff.
Yeah.
And you rode a bike.
But we
rode a bike to burn off the stuff you ate. That was fun.
No, not so much.
To lift weights.
See, so now imagine if like... Out. Imagine if you were running through Grand Theft Auto world, and then when you pressed run, instead of running like 3.5 times faster than a normal human being, you're like really just running.
Oh, dude, it's annoying in Grand Theft Auto when you have stamina and you run out of stamina.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
No.
I just want to freaking run. It's yeah, I don't know. That's a really tough question.
We'll have that when we have our holodecks, and then we're actually doing it. And then mm-hmm. the games will have to come to our level.
Hey, yeah. And you won't have a sprain your ankle meter. You'll sprain your fucking ankle and be like, God,
I'm in a holodeck. Can I just do the Sherlock Holmes level again? And I just sit around and talk to dudes that look like John Picard.
Billy, M.H. Silver would like you to come on the forums, but in lieu of coming on the forums, I'll have you right here confront his question.
Being summoned to the forums, that's a scary thing.
Yeah, put me like on the spot.
Tell him he's wrong. But Billy seems to be one of those people that reveres Japanese game design and art. And to that end, it seems that he would rather Japanese developers continue to do their own thing, no matter how out of date or eccentric their thinking, than see them adopt more modern design paradigms or tackle new Western subject material. I think it's a stupid line of thinking that only prevents Japan from reestablishing itself as a power in the video game industry.
That's a fair. What do you think? That's a fair balanced question, Billy. Not loaded at all.
Yeah. Wow. Modern equals Western?
No, I don't think modernizing
Western
their,
equals awesomer.
Modernizing their things.
USA,
I mean, that
USA.
Was something. Look at MGS4. That was.
He's going to start yakking in a minute.
MGS4 was a lot more. I would say more modernized. At least they brought the shooter. They brought elements of a Western style shooter over into MGS4, but I still feel it felt like a Japanese developed game. So I don't think I like. I don't know. There's Japanese style that I really enjoy in video games. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I am a fan of that, but I don't think, I don't know, I'm trying to, you put me on the spot. I'm trying to word what I...
Homogenizing anything, I think, is a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Having different styles, different cultural aspects is good. Maybe we're waning on that influence in mainstream hits. There used to be... All the mainstream hits were these Japanese games, I think, when I was a kid, at least. But those are ebbs and flows, and I think that I would hate for that to just be the solution is do things like these other people. I think that's always
I think,
a bad idea.
I think
we look at Final Fantasy, they made that shooter. Yeah. I remember playing that, and it was awful, and it was like, and I understand. I can understand.
I remember Andrew reviewing that, and...
Oh, Dirge?
Yes.
Yeah. Terrible.
I think you
absolutely terrible.
I think we lost a controller to that one.
Multiple, I think. Almost lost the TV.
It was not a good situation.
I mean, I can understand the like higher ups at a company going, this is this type of game and it sells really well. We should adapt our game, you know, our video game or our franchise and have a shooter element in Final Fantasy. I mean, because you know the Final Fantasy fans really want a first person shooter. I mean,
I think we just overthink this whole thing a little bit right now because we're on the inside with the cool kids as opposed to the outside looking at the cool kids. And the same thing happened to Western games about a decade ago in the post-Command & Conquer era. There were so many Command & Conquer real-time strategy clones, and they got very boring and very set in their ways. And they're like, oh, real-time strategy is dead. Like no one's ever going to want to play a real-time strategy game again. There's no innovation. They're all doing the same thing. All these same sort of complaints that get leveled at, for instance, Japanese development right now. And the reality was that people had just gotten complacent. And they had just gotten also in their minds that, look, people really want these sorts of games. We're going to build lots of these sorts of games. And 2 years ago when we were doing our design docs, this is what we thought the games that they wanted to play would be.
Is kind of happening now in our shooters.
Shooters.
Very much happening now.
Everything has perks and points and leveling up.
Yeah, so don't be surprised if in a couple of years we're having this conversation about shooters. I can already feel it coming.
You said it in the show. How many multiplayer shooters am I going to play?
I'm echoing that everywhere because that's my new mantra is how many freaking guys running around with guns and shooting each other games do I need?
Not just that, but
I like to play them online.
Military-esque is really where it's...
I like to play them online, but I only need one or two. Like I only need a couple variations on that theme and then because everyone's gotten to where they refine them so well. So I just think we're looking at it from the inside of the cool kids. We much have Western design is, you know, right now in vogue and it's like what people are excited about and that's what people have been getting. And we're looking at theirs of like, oh, you guys are old and busted. But they're not just going to be old and busted because then the Relic comes along and does Company of Heroes and you're like, wow, mm-hmm. It's fucking awesome. And it's still a real-time strategy game, but it's a new twist. And like, obviously, like, there's so many creative minds there. Anyone out there who's made that argument, tell me that you're not fucking excited about Last Guardian, and I will slap you.
I'm excited until it got delayed.
That's fine, but I mean, still, seriously, tell me you are not excited about that game. I will slap you.
Stupid developers.
So much for 2011 being the best gaming year ever.
No, it will be. It will be. Super Mario.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. I didn't mean to answer for you, Billy. But like, part of the reason I threw that out there was because I like Image Silver. He's a regular contributor to the show. Keep going, brother. But man, sometimes he makes me want to.
Sounds like Billy's new arch rival.
Sometimes he makes me want to reach through the internets and go like, "What the hell are you talking about?"
You want to punch him in his inner nuts?
I want to.
Wow! And something I'm totally going to use sometime.
Hey, let's wrap this segment up on mashup. Let's do some mashups. I have one that I thought of.
Oh, yours is great.
This is like this is our new thing of what character would you like to see in another world? So mine for this week is I would like to see GLaDOS in Metal Gear Solid as Otacon, because I can just see Snake like.
I think that's funny,
GLaDOS.
Yeah, Snake.
Oh, you again.
Oh, you again. Why are you killing the robots?
I knew you could do this, but maybe maybe you shouldn't be so old.
Do you suppose you are having these bad feelings? Because you are bad.
I think we just proved that we can't write for Portal.
No, this is true. Especially not on the fly. But I still, I think that like like with the way those one-liners are, I could just like, like it would be so, it would be totally disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be awesome.
He's smoking cigarettes like, shut up.
That's a stupid bitch.
He would fucking tell her off too.
Can we agree that Portal is the best use of auto-tune ever?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
Yep.
You stole my theme. For that answer.
What? Oh, I didn't mean to, but like, go ahead. You should like take it away.
So I would put Old Solid Snake in a Heavy Rain type adventure. Because he's lost a step. He's lost a little bit of agility. But if you put him in like a bumbling Scott Shelby.
Jason.
No, he can't run that
fast. Like after the graveyard scene, like...
Yeah.
He's going to let Jason like go
he's,
do his
he's
thing.
Retired. Jason. He's retired.
I'm going to make some eggs.
Possibilities are endless. Actually, no, there's an end to it, but yeah, there are a few possibilities.
There's some Metamucil.
I got another Portal one.
Yes.
What's the name of the main character in Portal? Chell?
Chell.
Chell? What if I honestly wish there was a game with Chell, Portal gun in hand, in Mirror's Edge.
Oh
shit!
Good one.
If you could do portals along with running over rooftops and around city, a la Mirror's Edge. Mirror's Edge, dude. That is a waste of opportunity.
You just solved the put a gun in their hand that they needed. That's not a gun.
Yeah.
If they had that would have solved that game because now you've got a gun, so you've got that familiarity of interaction in the world. But it's not a gun because the gun never felt right in that game.
Never.
And wow. Genius.
Make Jeff, it happen. Make it happen.
Let's you and I make this game.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Okay. I will be the idea man.
Okay.
You make it.
I have a book on programming I'm going to learn.
You're drawing and learning.
C sharp.
Nice. Well, you're going to be art and design. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And we're 50-50 on that.
No, actually. We'll talk.
All right. Billy?
I want to put Grayson Hunt from Bulletstorm into Portal. Just to change it up
a little
bit.
I saw this. Like, just it's, does it need little dick tits?
Everything's so nice.
Well, he's already making conjunctions with his words, with his insults and curses. Yeah. He can do that with like he can put dick on one side of a portal and tits on the other, and then connect the two.
This is like some Sesame Street going on up in your mouth. Sesame Street portal cursing. Well, with Grayson Hunt.
It's a word puzzle game.
You know, there's a lot of highbrow wordsmith in Portal 2.
It's a word
and then
puzzle
then you
game.
Bring in Grayson Hunt, shakes it up.
Swear words with friends.
I already do that. We're talking about Portal.
Yeah, you do, actually. You do.
Yeah, shit works. Just saying.
Wow. Shit happens.
This little character mashup idea maybe has potential. I wasn't so sure last week.
I think it's fun to theme it around the games we're talking about.
That was kind of fun.
It's cool.
I kind of like that a lot. This isn't around a game that we were talking about, but it is a theme based around some game music. This is Haunted Shores with Ahead on Our Way, a Final Fantasy VII cover.
We'll be right back.
Andrew's doing the electronic air guitar there. Dude, to this.
That was quite the performance, sir.
Air guitar is. I went to school. I'm classically trained.
That's fantastic.
In air guitar.
That is.
That was Haunted Shores. Haunted Shores has actually contributed to the show before, so thanks very much for your submission again. And that was Ahead on Our Way, a Final Fantasy VII cover, and I think it was the song Andrew said he really liked on Final Fantasy VII.
That was a good soundtrack.
We also have another new submission because, you know, Billy was horrified by news, bitch. So we're striking that.
Such a prude.
This is
prude.
This is from a listener, right?
This is from a listener. So this is the on test. New news jingle. You tell us whether you like it or not.
It's the news on the front page.
I like it.
It's quick.
It adds a youthy exuberance to the show.
I'm confused.
A badly needed youth.
Yes.
I don't know what's going on. I didn't understand the
youthiness.
Okay.
It's got youthiness.
Whimsy.
It's the news.
It's got whimsy, for sure.
Whimsy.
You hear that, like, thing. That's cool.
So last Thursday, right as we were recording this very show, well, not this show, but the show from last week, which was only different by a week.
That's a great description.
Well put,
good math
of the present.
And begin.
It was 56. This is 57.
Explanation transcended time.
I'm on it. So
there's that part in Portal, by the way, where it says, like, be careful, there, you might have some time travel here. And I was like, oh, my God.
Yep.
And then it didn't do that. And I was like,
there were a lot of lies in that game. Yeah. Delicious lies.
Anyway, right as we were recording the show, the Wii 2 rumors took flame again. Phil Kohler, I think, was at the heart of them with Game Informer. And everybody picked them up and ran with them.
Can we agree not to call it Wii 2? Doesn't have like a rumored code name? That sounds
Cafe.
Much better. I'd rather
Project
go with
wanna,
Project
Cafe. You want to get rid of all of its Wii-ness?
Yes. I want to not have that. I want to not
I
have
Matthew,
a Wii associated.
Matthew Cotto over at Game Informer wrote that. I think.
Oh, was it?
But it was probably a
somehow
collaborative thing.
A collaborative thing.
Somehow we all, by osmosis, knew that this was going to happen because we talked about it for freaking 20 minutes on last week's show when we didn't even know that it was going to happen.
Well, I mean, look.
My Nintendo alarm went off.
You did. Your Spidey sense was tingling.
It's true.
As Steve reminded me in our news, like, didn't have to really remind me, like, John and I talked about Wii HD, like, in 2000, well,
dude,
yeah, when it was released, when the Wii was released, and it wasn't HD.
People
were
like,
maybe 2008.
Yeah. We had reasonably consistent reports from developers that, like, hey, we like Nintendo's been out pitching us on this idea of a Wii, but with a, you know, like a high resolution or an HD output in it.
These rumors go far beyond that.
These rumors go farther than that. So the stuff that Game Informer ran said that they had talked to a number of development sources who had said that it's like they're going to introduce this new system. It has HD resolution, but didn't really have too much confirmed on how powerful it would be, and that they were trying to get support for a 2012 launch. The rest of it started to become like a little it's gotten way more hyperbolic since then.
Uh-huh.
IGN says that their sources said that it's going to be significantly more powerful than the Xbox 360
than you could possibly imagine. Strike me down.
It runs on a dual core flux capacitor, capable of 1080p output, backwards compatible with the Wii software. And then the latest round of foo has just gotten completely out there, where now it's going to have a new controller, and the controller has dual sticks and a 6.2-inch...
You sound skeptical.
Well...
And it's powered by
Jesus. So it's going to have a 6-inch... It's going to have a 6-inch screen. Now, I'm looking at this phone, and I'm thinking, I think that the dimension on this phone's screen is something like 4 inches of some sort diagonal. So it's going to be another 2 inches larger than this. It's a touch screen. It's an HD screen. It has a camera and two thumbsticks.
Not HD.
And all that for $250.
Some reports said HD screen, I thought.
I thought it was corrected to be not HD.
Okay, so it's got a big
screen. It's not HD and not multi-touch, last I heard.
Oh, so but it is touch, right? It is still
a touch
screen. So it's a big touch screen controller with dual thumbsticks and a camera?
Front-facing camera.
And
they're
going to
call it the DS Home.
Oh.
No.
It also makes
no. No, they're not?
Okay.
No.
It also makes quesadillas.
I just want... If it made toast, I'd be happier. Like, quesadilla takes a lot of effort to eat, but like I can play a game one-handed and eat a piece of toast. If it comes with a little butter, that'd be good. Wheat toast.
Okay. We'll get on that.
Okay. So, first of all, do we think that there's like... Do we think that a new Wii is imminent again?
Yes.
Really imminent. Like, they're going to show it at E3?
We talked about this last week, but yes.
Yeah.
All right. So,
E3. Boom.
I don't know about show, but definitely tell.
I don't think that they'll show the hardware. I think it'll
No. They'll save that to the very end.
Yeah, yeah. I think it'll be like a big demo-y sort of like, here's what we're doing, here's some screens, here's some stuff.
Here are our partners.
Here are partners. They'd like to do that sort of thing, definitely. Now, what about all these like wild speculations, especially about the controller?
Nintendo controllers always there's always that crazy speculation about Nintendo controllers.
So in combination with the touchscreen controller, other rumors have said we're also going to have another motion controller with better fidelity than Sony's Move.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you take everything as this group of information and you believe it, it's the kitchen sink. It's like it's shaping up to be a hot mess of a system.
It's
like,
the same thing that happens with every Apple upcoming announcement. It's the freaking iPad 2 is going to be solar powered, and it's going to be, you know,
iPad 2 is going to be solar powered?
Yeah, you didn't hear?
Dope.
Here's the thing. A controller that has a touchscreen and two analog sticks feels to me like a absolute 180-degree turn from where they've been going, which
Nintendo's philosophy has always been one core concept. With 64, it was 3D. The controller was built on that. GameCube, not so much a core philosophy as just games.
Yeah.
That we would prefer to focus on games.
Tiny discs.
But Wii was motion control. Motion control, not just simplify.
Yeah. That whole, like, it's a remote control. It's got one big button on it. It's
now you have
accessible to non-gamers.
Two different controllers with cameras and touch screens and still having a sensor bar and all of this stuff.
No, the controller is a sensor bar. That's what.
No, I think that was a correction to a rumor, like a mistranslation.
I don't buy any of it.
You don't buy any of it.
I buy that there's going to be an actual physical controller because Nintendo. They even said it at GD. I mean,
you mean as opposed to sort of a Kinect idea?
as opposed to like a Wiimote.
Really?
Yeah, I believe there'll be something with dual sticks. I believe there will be an actual. Yeah, they want games that are also going to be on other systems. They, you know, that's the problem they're having with third parties is that when you make a Wii game, you have to make a game specifically for the Wii. It's not something that can easily be ported over from something else.
Do you not think that they would somehow include both as standard to maintain backwards compatibility?
Well, they're doing that now.
Why would they?
It seems like such a.
It
seems
a problem.
Like that would mean they'd fully remove motion control.
I do not buy that happening.
I think
I don't either.
With the success of the Wii, with basically their entire marketing strategy over the past 4 years has been open it up to non-gamers, make it accessible, and it has been a hugely successful venture for them.
I think it'll be an option. I think especially with the backwards, if you know they do like the backwards compatibility,
it's got to be standardized motion and whatever regular controller they're going to do. If they're going to do both, it has to be both of them have to be packed in. Maybe one fits into the other. Like if it's a 6-inch screen on a controller, maybe build the motion into like a storage in the back. I don't know. It just sounds crazy, and I believe they're going to do it because if you look at the DS stuff, DS is just getting more complicated. There's more and more features that they just keep adding stuff to it. So I think that's what they're going to do.
And do you guys buy the power of the system idea? That it's
roughly 360?
Wow. What we were hearing is more powerful than either 360 or
PS3. Recent corrections and recent rumors have put it around 360, maybe slightly more powerful.
So it seems like, well, they're always going to be one generation behind.
Mm-hmm. Right now, I want to say I'm fine with it. Like that's the same thing I kind of said with the Wii, and I quickly distanced myself from that after seeing some HD games.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'll be fine with Mario running in 1080.
Because if you're releasing the Wii HD or whatever it's going to be called, and it's basically a 360, it kind of puts pressure on Sony and Microsoft to start the whole process of the new console cycle, right? You're saying is we want those third-party games to come to our system too, and we're even going to go so far as backtrack on our whole controller approach and put in dual sticks and et cetera to kind of make that an easy transition. And you force the hand of these other companies to update their consoles, and now you're again a generation behind. You're doing the exact opposite of what you're trying to do because all these companies are making new games for these new consoles, and you are with this console that's doesn't have the power of whatever these next consoles will be.
I think a lot of it depends on, you know, someone should take the temperature on third parties and be like, do you want new powerful system or do you want to continue making games at your current budgets or maybe your lower budgets on this 360 level of power, which you're comfortable and familiar with, or do you want to start investing into
you know that's gonna be
new Sony and Microsoft?
There's no way that creative people. Creative people are going to be like there will be business folks who will say, oh, we should keep doing this, we'll keep doing this. But when you get the creative folks, they're going to say,
yeah, but
give
who
me
makes,
more.
Who makes the final call? The business folks.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think I'm with Andrew as far as like the controller goes, Billy. Like, look, I'm not convinced that
I don't think they're going to have this like crazy fucked up thing with like 18 buttons. And
oh, I don't think they'll have
a touch screen and a camera.
And
all
I think
that
sounds completely unwieldy. Now, the Nintendo 64 controller and the GameCube controller were pretty unusual in appearance.
Right.
They were designed around usability concepts that were maybe successful to varying degrees. Well, I'm being generous.
All game controllers, by their nature, have to be confusing looking. That's why the Wii Remote was tried to fashion towards a
which
TV
is why
remote.
I don't.
But they're gonna
I don't
keep,
buy
they're
the...
gonna keep with the Wii Remote. I mean, the Wii Remote.
Exactly.
The Wii Remote. Not the Wii Remote. Wii Remote Plus, though. I can all but assure you that the Wii Remote Plus will work with whatever the next thing they do is, because it's so much a part of what they've been about.
Iwata's keynote at GDC was all about how everybody doubted us when we saw the Wii, but the success was making it accessible. Giant button, looks like a remote control that everybody's used to from using a television.
Now, I do see them doing something with the controller. I mean, look how popular Classic controller has been for the system.
Exactly.
So I'm sure they're really aware that, hey, look, we need to offer another option. We like having the nunchuck was a nice thought, was a compromise, but it didn't really work. Like, really, I think they've sort of figured out that if you're playing a Wii game, you're playing without the nunchuck, you're just playing with the simplicity of the Wii remote handle. And if you're going to just play a game that works like that, that's great. But if you need more than that, you really want to bust out a controller. Like, as soon as you start adding the nunchuck and you're like tethered together, then
I think it'll be hybridized.
Yeah.
So, regular and motion.
And then the other thing about this controller is that I'm sure that somewhere somebody's seen something to give them this idea. I mean, like, I don't really think that someone just reached in their ass and came up with this idea of it's going to have a touch screen and it's going to be six. I think that if you go back, maybe this is because of like...
Isn't that what a 3DS is, by the way?
Well,
it's a touch screen and a camera.
So
why do I want a touch screen on my controller?
You don't know yet.
No, that's,
that is not a good answer.
No, it's the answer we have.
But that's
we'll find out.
That is the Nintendo answer.
We'll either find out at this E3 or next E3.
But the idea theoretically is that I'm taking my eyes off my screen and looking at a different screen in my lap. I mean, I loved my VMU, but I wasn't using it to control the game.
Well, if you look at something like Zelda Four Swords, which is it's difficult to play. It's difficult to assemble, like just the equipment and the people you need. But once you have four people with 4GB, it's fun. And if you standardize that, if everyone has that.
So now that I like am back in the thick of news a lot all the time, a couple of months ago I wrote a story based off of an Iwata asked, and they were talking about the history of the 3DS.
Based off of Iwata's ass.
And,
what?
And I think that a lot of this speculation probably comes from people having seen stuff that's in their R&D department. Mm-hmm. Because they was talking about how, look, we had 3D running on the GameCube. But they didn't make a 3D GameCube, but they use that technology ultimately. So I'm sure that they've been experimenting and playing with all sorts of things. As a matter of fact, Miyamoto just recently in Europe was interviewed by like one of the European websites and said, you know, hey, look, we're researching stuff all the time. And I think that what's happening here is like, yeah, there's a good kernel of truth that there's going to be a new Wii. We've known about it for a long time. Maybe they're now really finally moving forward in earnest.
And so you think somebody got into Wonka's factory and saw the fizzy lifting drink, but there's no
I think that maybe
intention of
releasing
that.
Isn't a lot of this stuff supposed to be coming from third-party stuff?
Yes.
Yes.
So why would Nintendo show this stuff to third parties?
To tell
they
them stuff
ready?
That they're... Yeah, so they get...
Like, just to seed ideas?
Yeah, and like, hey, Andrew, if we
what, did... Yeah, what if we gave you this?
Yeah, what would you do with this? What would you do with this?
Theoretically.
Cool this?
Yeah, not saying we are. Not saying we are.
Not saying we are.
But if we did...
What if we had two controllers...
And so then they come back, you know, so the third party comes back and they've got some ideas. And then, you know, in the meanwhile, like Nintendo starts working up ideas of how to actually turn this into a consumer product. And somewhere in the middle, the two meet.
Well, if all of that is what's going on, then it ain't going to be happening at E3 because all of that should have happened
months ago. Imagine what the cost of these controllers would be with a 6-inch screen and a camera and twin sticks. And
plus,
and
you put out a handheld device that A, doesn't have twin sticks, and B, is all of that anyway.
Yeah.
Why would you include that in your home console?
I have no idea. Anyway. So there you go. Wii 2 rumors. Lots and lots of them.
Project Cafe.
Project Cafe.
With the accent, Mark?
Cafe. No word on whether or not you can get a curry bun while you're at the Project Cafe, but I hope so. Because those are delicious.
Amen.
March NPDs were also out last week, and we'll just touch on these very quickly so we don't like belabor sales figures, but like it was important because 3DS was incorporated into this, and so there was a little analysis from Anita Frazier of the NPD there, and it really came out that 3DS did well. It did only sell just shy of 400,000 units in its first 7 days after launching, and they estimated that that was somewhere around 100,000 units fewer than Nintendo DS sold during a similar launch period.
Was it supply constrained?
No, there were not. There was not a number of...
That's a term I read on the internet.
That's not represented here. I think you're referring to...
It was price constrained.
That's iPad 2's excuse. Apple's excuse
right.
Like, they didn't sell enough iPad 2's because it's supply constrained. They did make more money because the 3DS is more expensive. They also, interestingly, sold more software, which for as much as we sort of berated the quality of the 3DS's launch lineup, they did sell software.
What was the number one game?
Super Street Fighter 4 3D Edition, of course. That's not a surprise. I don't think.
Not surprising that it is, but I would have maybe put Pilot Wings up there too.
Well, so one thing we did notice...
Or actually Nintendogs over Pilot Wings.
One thing we did notice is that while Super Street Fighter 4 3D Edition was the number one selling of those titles, none of the 3DS titles sold enough to break into the top 10. However, Pokemon White and Black didn't have any trouble.
Shock.
Dominating.
Aw.
Dominating the retail sales in spots number 1 and 2... With 1.3 million Pokemon Whites and 1.1 million Pokemon Blacks.
That's a lot of Pokemans. Like lots of Pokemans.
200,000 people that just only bought one of them.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah. The marketing effort for Homefront obviously served the game very well as it came in third place on the charts. Dragon Age 2 was in fourth. Call of Duty Black Ops rounds out the top five, still soldiering on and...
Blops.
Dominant.
Soldiering.
Dominant in the sale. It's just ridiculous, isn't it? Lego Star Wars 3, Clone Wars in 6th, Crysis 2.
Is that across all platforms?
So remember, we don't get it granular anymore. Well, yeah, 3DS isn't there.
Right.
Crysis 2, NBA 2K11, MLB The Show.
But yay!
It's combined, but I don't think they probably sell that many on PSP anymore. So it's probably a PS3 win. And then a Fight Night champion in the 10th position. That's pretty good for Fight Night. I'm sure those guys are pretty happy about that. So.
Sports.
Yeah. And on the hardware front, the 360 was again the best-selling console of the month. It sold 430,000, which is an increase of 28% over the same period last year. Sony has now shipped more than 50 million units of PlayStation 3 worldwide. Huh, you know what? There's a Move number here. They've sold some Moves.
What is it? What's the number?
I don't know. We'll ask Gaff. Sure, that
how many thousands
they've shipped? They've shipped 8 million.
Yes,
8 million.
That sounds like
moves.
A lot. Is that a lot?
That could be a lot. It depends how you count things. There are not many. Or a lot.
It depends on what type of math you use. There are two types of math:
Microsoft math and Sony math.
No, I'm sorry, Billy. I just got a piece of shit.
That's okay.
So
I'm waiting for the Gears thing when they're like, "There are no perks." There's weapon unlocks. I know. I fucked that up, too.
And
are you really down on yourself in this section?
I'm poopy pants.
Hey,
I'm sorry.
Believe in yourself. Even if no one else does.
Serenity now!
Yep. There you go.
And so I don't have the rest of the figures because I just didn't want to get too bogged down in it. But one thing that is interesting is that we have now learned that the Wii was quietly lowered in price after these figures came out. Last week, we dropped the price drop rumor.
They just said, "Man, we'll drop the price."
That's a good idea.
But it's really weird. They didn't make any promotion out of it. It's just suddenly, like Target and Amazon and Best Buy and GameStop. It's like, oh, it's $169 now. Of course, it's always been like that's right. It's $170. $170. I wonder if do you think it'll bounce any. Is $169 enough to get it to bounce?
I think it is. I think it is.
With what game driving it?
That's the question. Yeah,
Mario Kart.
Yeah.
We play
Wii
Motion.
Sports Resort.
Oh, you know, that's really interesting. When we see the April numbers in a month, we'll really know how much it helped because Nintendo titles, their first-party titles, are notorious for coming back into the charts anytime they do something to stimulate sales. So you're right. That's interesting. That's a really very interesting point you brought up.
Yeah.
All right, enough sales. I'm not a huge sales guy. Kind of sorry, sales age. I'm sort of like, actually, as I'm getting older and wiser, admitting to the fact that I'm really not that thrilled by sales figures. Other than it's kind of interesting.
It's okay not to be thrilled by sales figures, just to say.
Yeah. I'm made me peace
especially
with that.
Especially when you're wrong.
Millions and millions of people agree with you.
It's been a long time since the PSP was anywhere registering on the top of those sales charts, and we know the NGP is coming, so quietly, or not so quietly, Sony did confirm that in Europe and Japan, the PSP Go is being discontinued.
Not here, though?
Mm-hmm.
Not here, though? It lives here?
Well, funny you should ask that, Mr. Pfister.
Huh.
Joystick did a little follow-up with them, because we were all assuming that, of course, PSP Go is just being end-of-lifed, right? No, it's not being end-of-lifed in America. No, America production's going to continue. Because, you know...
I thought you were going to say ramp up to compensate.
You know, there's one thing...
We just all double our efforts.
There's one thing about the country where people will, already owning an iPad 1, go stand in line and buy every goddamn iPad 2 they can get their hands on until their supply's constrained.
That is bizarre.
It's that they don't really want the latest and greatest. They don't care. They want last year's technology, especially when they know that it's already, you know, basically end of life. And by the way, it wasn't even completely supported because there were games that came out on disc that never came out on PlayStation Network. Sure, keep making it and selling it. I'm sure it'll go over big.
Well, they've got bargain bins in the U.S. Maybe that's not a big thing in Europe and Japan.
You can't bargain bin for PSP Go. It's digital only.
Paradox.
No, the hardware.
I think that's the new byline. PSP Go. You can't bargain bin PSP Go.
We gotcha, bitches.
It's gonna be that little kid on TV.
Marcus.
Marcus.
Anyway, so
what kind of blew my mind about that is like each country had their own thing, and like in US, it's like no, we'll still have it. It's like, can't you guys all get on the same page when you're gonna do something like?
It's sad. It was never supported well. I think it's like, you know what? It was fine. It was an okay digital bridge device. You were like playing around with ideas of how you can do PlayStation Network and how to do digital distribution. Just say, you know what? Fine. We're done with it. That's it. We're closing the chapter of PSP Go. I mean, why would you let Japan and Europe announce that it's like they're done? They're like, oh, yeah, we're going to keep selling America. Of course. Really? Really? Like, we're... Yeah. Anyway. Misunderstanding of like how big a technology hounds Americans are, because especially the guy who's going to go buy that not going to go buy it after it's like out of date. I don't know. You wonder like maybe like they think about how well PS2 did after PS3 came out, and they think, oh, you know what, we could keep doing it. But I think that that's...
don't they still sell the regular PSPs, the non-go?
Oh yeah, so they're going to keep doing that. 3000s are going to keep selling, and that's fine. I mean, 3000 makes sense. Because obviously you can pick up all the old disc media. You never have to worry about it. You can walk into a store and find, you know, the games on UMD. But I'm thinking about PS2 because remember they sold PS2 for so long after PS3 came out. But there was such a library for PS2.
Yeah, PS2 was...
like there was such established demand for it.
Yeah, it's
like
huge difference.
If that's what they're thinking, it's not the same situation by any stretch of the imagination. I don't know. We still are going to have to wait a little while longer now for our favorite PS2, or at least my most anticipated PS2 collection to come out. As announcements came this week that both The Last Guardian and the Ico and Shadow of the Colossus collection have been delayed.
Ugh, daggers.
Delays are temporary. Bad games are forever.
Yes. And the worst part of it is these are delays without new dates. They're just delays. I mean, I hate that the part of it is like...
The indefinite delay?
No. They said they will have information coming soon, but that they're just delayed.
My theory on the Ico Shadow of the Colossus delay is that it's a strategic thing for putting it out... to set up interest in
The Last Guardian.
Yeah, that makes sense to me a little bit as far as like a marketing plan, but god damn it, it's frustrating because I've been really looking forward to that.
Me too, man. But I think
and that one's not a dev, not a like not a creative dev decision kind of thing. It's like just, it's a lot of tech work to crunch out.
Well, I think that it's going to be part of their marketing strategy for Last Guardian is this kind of 1-2 punch of promotion that's going to get these properties back into people's minds. I hope. I mean,
no, that makes perfect sense.
So drop the remakes in spring, and then Last Guardian in fall.
Well, they're gonna I think they'll hold for a while because I don't know the Last Guardian will be fall.
He's talking about 2012. You're talking about 2012, right?
Yeah.
Oh dear God, no! I have to have Shadow of the Colossus this year.
I don't think you will.
It ain't happening.
You don't think I'll have Shadow of the Colossus collection this year?
No.
No, dude. Come on. No way. I will have it set up.
I think it's a setup for Last Guardian, and if Last Guardian is not coming in 2011.
Yeah, no, that
the collection is dependent on Last Guardian. Once they know for sure Last Guardian's done, then they set the date for the collection.
Last Guardian doesn't surprise me.
I think that's right, dude.
God, I'd be wrong. I mean, I cannot be upset with Fumito Ueda, who gave this very, very nice apology. He says, to provide more challenging and better quality of content to users and to fulfill first-party studios' obligations, I decided to postpone its release timing. All members of my production team are working together at a fast pace to develop and release the game in first-party studio quality. I sincerely apologize to all customers who've been waiting for The Last Guardian for so long, but I beg for your patience. I will also announce the new release timing at a later time.
It's the Gran Turismo of emotional adventure.
Nicely said.
It's all right. He wouldn't have been able to get it out on PlayStation Network this weekend anyway, since it's crashing all over the place. Man, PlayStation Network is having some trouble, and it couldn't come at a worse time with SOCOM 4, which is very multiplayer-focused, Portal 2, which has this very cool first integration of Steam into it, the Infamous 2 beta test, and people wanting to play Kratos on Mortal Kombat Online, all happening at the same time. And PlayStation Network has, in many ways... It's all the people trying to download Fancy Pants Adventures.
Yes, co-op.
If you've been having trouble logging into PlayStation Network, you are not alone. The official word finally came Thursday morning from Corporate Communication Director Patrick Siebold, who said that the problems may last as long as a full day or two while they get the system back up and running. We are investing in the cause of the network outage. We wanted to alert you that maybe a full day or two before we're able to get the service completely back up and running. Thank you very much for your patience while we work to resolve this matter. Please stay tuned for this space for more details, and we'll update you as soon as we can. You know what? Like, especially as much as I've worked in game websites, and Andrew probably relate to this, this is completely speculation, but I'd be willing to bet that the database communication that they have to run with Steam wound up being...
That was Valve's secret plan. We will take down PSN.
No, but I mean, like...
Trojan horse.
Dude, from my own experience,
GLaDOS
like,
is final...
Anytime you've got,
we have no motivation to do so, but we'll do it because we can.
GLaDOS is like, PlayStation Network, I will take you down.
That's funny.
Anytime you have two big databases that need to interface with one another, you can sit there and write the programs and test them all you want to, but once you load them up with real content and actually have them like talking to each other and like trying to exchange all that data and stay running,
shit's gonna break.
And the only reason, the only other thing that I was like circumstantial evidence to this is, like, the first thing I noticed was a couple of days ago, my PlayStation 3 stopped logging in automatically when I turned it on. Like, I'd turn it on, and instead of it auto-logging me into PSN, I'd have to scroll over to the right.
That happens to me all the time.
Yeah, mine's been doing that for a while.
Years.
Really? Mine never did it until this week.
Happens all the time.
Me neither.
Mine was doing that a couple weeks ago.
So, well, maybe they started putting in the database tools. I don't know.
Perhaps.
But it's purely speculation. I really hope they
get
this
back up. It's an interesting theory.
They have so many cool games going on right now. They really need to get this fixed. I wish them best of luck. I really hope they get that back up and going, because people want to play Portal 2.
It's my Netflix still works, though, right? That's the most important part.
It does, actually. Actually, folks are saying that even if you don't get the login, the Netflix is a secondary system, so it's still working fine.
Yay.
I worked fine today for Dave, too, so yeah. Good shape. And you know, you can't leave people waiting when they want their Portal 2, because they get mad, and then they do internet campaigns.
If there's anything that exemplifies the it's nice to want things mentality, it's this. Yeah.
So let's go through the whole Portal 2 thing. So first, on PC, there was the ARG that culminated in the Potato Sack Indie Bungle, and people were like, wait, I thought you were going to give me the game on Friday when it comes out on Tuesday, and everyone was very upset about that. There was lots of gnashing of teeth, and so first of all on that, what did you guys think of the ARG, and what did you guys think of the whole we're going to play these games, and the more you play the games, the sooner it'll unlock?
I didn't follow the ARG too much.
I didn't follow the ARG, but the resultant of it was that there's a dozen games in the Potato Sack Indie Bundle.
About that, yeah.
And some people were like, oh, you want us to go buy the games. And actually, you didn't have to go buy the game. Basically, all they said was, we're going to watch how many people are playing the game. And the more people we have playing the games, the more computing power it will come put towards building up Portal 2. I thought it was a really cool thing.
It was really smart. And to sell games. Wow, guess what? Valve's a company. Holy crap.
I'm not even going to be a cynic like that. I actually think there's a lot of folks at Valve who support in the indie game movement mm-hmm. and are like, we have this ginormous, huge game. We have tons of attention.
We have this megaphone.
We have a megaphone. Let's get a little attention for these guys. Those are all fucking great games. Oz in there.
Did you play any of those games?
Yeah.
While this thing was going on?
Yeah, did you contribute?
Because GLaDOS was in a lot of the games.
In Audio Surf. Yeah. In Audio Surf was genius.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And she'd like talk shit.
That's
like,
fantastic.
While you're playing the game. I'm like, that's really cool.
Yeah, they all patched. It was really cool. It was super cool.
So it sounds like the big brouhaha is that maybe the computation calculation was wrong or a little unexpected.
See, I wondered whether they had decided ahead of time, like, oh, we'll unlock it for them on
Saturday. Billy, you were adamant when we were talking about this the weekend before that, oh, yeah, they'll just unlock it on Sunday or on Saturday.
And I don't think
so. No, there's no way they're going to do that because they made arrangements with this, like, that would sell out the potato games.
Yep. I think the Valve guys are geeks and that they overestimated mm-hmm. how quickly the Steam community would pounce on those games. Mm-hmm. And they figured, well, we'll set these numbers high enough that at least they have to play a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I bet they were thinking, man, these guys are going to blow this shit out by Sunday
morning. I exactly agree with you.
And then it didn't happen. And by that time, they're like, well, what the hell do we do now? You know, like, do we speed it up? And I don't know. So
it's something impossible to predict.
So that's the first one that got people upset. And then Monday night it unlocked at like 9:30, which was a few hours early, right? And like 2.5 hours early. But then the real shit hit the fan because the PC gaming community, a segment of the PC gaming community, is pretty upset with Valve over Portal 2 for making it a console port, which they claim it's a console port.
Ridiculous.
Because... well, ridiculous. Andrew, come on. When you save your game, it says make sure not to switch your console off, even if you're on a PC. My PC is not a console. Right. My PC is not a console.
Ridiculous.
My PC is not a console.
My God.
It's not a console. It's not a PC port.
My God.
It's a console port.
Ridiculous.
Console port. So they're mad about that. They're also mad about the game length, saying that they got gypped. It's too...
Also stupid. Ridiculous.
I'm just...
It's one of the best games ever made.
They're also upset that you turn the game on and there's $5 skins for your robots to play with in multiplayer for sale on the store.
What's up, Team Fortress? Been doing that for a long time. It's fun. You don't need it. Buy it if you like it.
These are the sum total of their complaints?
Yes, and so this group has started a Metacritic user review campaign to drive the Metacritic user reviews down. And so far they've been pretty successful. The Metacritic user reviews are down in the like 60s and 70s.
Which solidifies the value of user reviews.
If you could see the look
reviews.
On Jeff Cannata's face, it was truly like mournful. It was like
It's sad to me because it really is one of the best games ever made and I don't think it's gonna hurt anything. It's not gonna hurt the game any, but to nitpick, I guess maybe we're not understanding the extent to which because if it's literally just you called it a console and it's not a console in the semantics of the messaging,
and because it's not a long game and because it has DLC
it has
right
two,
from the
beginning. It's two full games. It's a
I'm just telling
you
people. I'm just telling you where they're coming from.
It took me about 8 hours.
About eight.
That's a freaking full game.
Get better at the game.
Be smarter.
I finished it, Garnet. Where are you?
Doesn't matter.
Uh-huh.
Why are you being defensive like that? Why are you turning around like that? What do you think we are, married?
Not for long if you keep talking like that.
Anyway, I agree. It's kind of a shame, so. There you go. That's what all the hubbub about is with Portal 2. But what the real hubbub should be about is you playing the game. Hopefully you will be playing the game and telling us what you think about it on the news thread for this week's show, which is where you should go right now to shacknews.com. Hit in the comments. Billy will hop into the comments as well, where MH Silver and he can have a vigorous debate about...
That's internet law, dude. If you're summoned to the forums, you have to show up.
You've been instantly summoned. Teleport yeah. there?
Dun, dun, dun.
He virtually slapped you with a
summon
white glove.
Summon me? Like That's Bahamut? True.
Bahamuts.
I want to like float up over everybody. No.
Yes,
like,
dude, you get it. Not nearly as grand. Not
I
nearly
like
as
Japanese
grand.
Games.
You get a 3-minute unskippable cutscene.
The Berghammer summons are crazy in this game, dude. He's just some sweet super
you
got, attacks.
You got to tap square all the time, though, and power it up.
If there ever is a Berghammer summon in any video game, I will. I don't even know what to do. That would be
it's
amazing.
Just it's just a big wave of beer.
All right.
Are we doing,
so,
are we doing
we're gonna, oh, yeah, we're going to wrap okay. things up right now because I summon finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
All right. Very dramatic entry to the fun and games one. I love it. It's awesome. Billy, finish them.
I want football to work their shit out, please. The schedules came out this week, and the Packers' schedule is so awesome. Lions on Thanksgiving.
Bears at Christmas. Bears at home.
Christmas, and we get to kick the Lions' ass again on New Year's Day. Like,
the Scabs are going to have a great time. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, and I just please work it out.
1987 called.
This is so silly, but
Green Bay quarterback Barry Dodgers.
You know, when Madden comes out, I want a season to support Madden. I want Madden to support a season. I want football, and I'm very excited. You know, the draft is next week. It should be. Poor Cam Newton, man. He's like, I don't even know if I'm going to be playing next year. Like,
yeah,
I'm ready for football.
Poor Cam Newton. He'll be all right, dude.
They're going to break, dude. There's already dissension in the ranks.
I'm sorry. When I mentioned the Packers, I forgot the world champion.
Just to be clear, world champion Green Bay Packers.
Green Bay Packers.
Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yeah,
high five.
They did beat everyone.
All right, all right.
Two Scotties.
Okay, you finished them. That's true. You finished them. Andrew, finish them.
On the topic of Portal 2 reviews and use of hyperbole, and I would just call for restraint for my fellow writers to not, you don't need to declare something as the best ever.
I think I did that today. I'm sorry.
No. It's good from like an enthusiast, like my favorite ever. Like this is, I can't imagine something to be better than this. That's fine. But you don't need to compare everything as like this one game. There are so many different games, so many different genres, so many different platforms. There's just, you look for the best and you extol the best, and there's not a singular. There will not be one game to rule them all.
I love having Andrew here.
It's true.
That's an ethos.
Although this one is the best one ever, right?
Yeah, this is the best. This is the best appearance I've ever had on a podcast.
We're experiencing this because, by the way, Andrew did. What'd you give Portal 2?
I gave it a 10 out of 10 in EGM.
And that's the old EGM ethos. It, like 10 out of 10 means that it's a great game. Doesn't have to be like that.
Exactly.
Anyway, I just remember those discussions. All right, Jeff, finish them.
Portal 2 also has something that Portal 1 had, which was the equivalent of director's commentary. Why has this not caught on? Why? It is awesome. I'm spending my second playthrough of Portal 2 listening to the director's commentary, and not only is it an interesting insight into design decisions, but there's some extremely technical elements that are explained. So a wonderful resource to aspiring game designers and game programmers, in the same way that director's commentary on DVDs is a wonderful resource for aspiring directors and screenwriters. I understand this game is not the kind of always on 11 crazy psychoness that I imagine having commentary in a game like that might be more difficult. But why has this concept not caught on more? I feel like after Portal 1 came out and they had that feature, I thought there was going to be a bunch of games that would use it, and we haven't seen it. I wish more games had it because it's awesome.
They also had an episode 1 and 2.
Just right, yes, exactly. Valve is the only people doing it, though.
Washington, D.C., wake the fuck up. Your own Federal Trade Commission just issued their undercover shopping survey this last week. And you know who the very best media industry is at keeping mature content out of the hands of minors? The video game business. It's not even close.
That doesn't sound like what I hear usually out of the
media. So wake the
or
hell
our
up.
Politicians.
Hmm. No. Politicians. Wake the hell up, folks, and pay attention. You've got 1/3 of kids who are able to walk into R-rated movies, 38% of them able to go get R-rated DVDs, 64% able to buy music with parental warning labels. Look, if you're going to not worry about it for these other guys, don't worry about it for us, where it's like, hold on. 13% were able to buy M-rated titles, and a bulk of them, the worst offenders were Walmart and Best Buy. So, sorry, folks. Wake up, pay attention, and the rating system does seem to work. All right, that's the big show for this week.
We're going to go see Prince.
Yes. Sorry, I'm doing my licking.
He just Minnesota'd out on us. Like, it was like,
hell yeah.
Yeah, you lived near the healing waters of Lake Minnetonka.
I lived very close to Paisley Park. And that's very good. That was a good Minneapolis reference, sir. I do have to
purple
say,
Purple Rain reference?
Really, really, really quick, Play for Japan, the Game Boy Advance that I had autographed by Miyamoto that I put up on auction, the same person that will be joining the Weekend Confirmed.
Oh, really? About that?
Also picked that up. He's like, hey, if you're going to be on the show, and that's like, I'm going to just pick it up there.
That
like,
and deliver
that,
it.
That dude like, is sweet.
Too charitable.
No, you know what?
Too
He's
charitable.
Cheap. He just wanted to save on shipping.
Damn your generosity,
cool
sir.
Guy, though. So one of your listeners also is helping to support Japan. So
awesome.
That's very cool.
All All right, everybody. Thanks very much for joining us. Remember to catch up with us on Shaq News, Facebook, Twitter. Del Rio has a new single out. What was the name of your video? Remind me. The Pigeonholed video, which actually is really good. You should check it out. It's got like
confirmed
it's a very
t-shirt in it.
It's a very rock and roll rap. I liked it actually, dude. That was actually badass. And he's representing with the Weekend Confirmed t-shirt in there. Like that.
Weekend
like
Concerned. That.
We can like concern.
Call that, make it that a segment.
We can concern.
Concerned.
We can oh, that's actually.
Dude, I'm producing your show for free.
I know.
Associate producer.
you didn't read the waiver when you came in, did you? Anyway, that's it, dude. That's your Weekend Confirmed. And until next week, we are Ghost.
The new me can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Game Center, the must-have app for gamers. Game Center is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShaqNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 7,000 games. Game Center is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.